Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to, for the first time in ages, a Tuesday Night Jaw roundtable recorded at the Acast Studios in London on the Distraction Pieces Network. I am Jim. I am ostensibly your host. I don't even know what ostensibly means. It works in that sentence, though, doesn't it? I don't know what it means.
Not sure it does work in that sentence.
No.
All right, just because you used to be a teacher.
Maths teacher. There was no numbers involved in that sentence.
I have guests. We're going to talk about NXT TakeOver Houston / War Games and Survivor Series, which we've all finished watching roughly 2 minutes ago, because this is very early on a Monday morning. I will introduce my guests. Guest number one, he is the leader of the Distraction Pieces Network.
Yeah.
We follow him like a cult, I think. It's Mr. Scroobius Pip.
Best faction in podcasting.
Yes,
oh, we all are a time. Faction. We're a faction. All-time best podcasting faction.
So you were nearly not here for this because you're presumably filming something.
I'm shooting a film in France. I travelled home yesterday and went straight to my mate Stu's to catch up on TakeOver. And then we watched, in between TakeOver and Survivor Series, we watched a little bit of the recent Riptide event in Brighton, which was good fun. And then Survivor Series, and then slept for mere moments before coming here to do the podcast.
Yes, that is, yeah.
And then back off to France in a day or two.
Nice.
So, yeah, good fun.
Good times. Presumably, whatever you're filming, you are not doing in French.
No, it's really weird because it's made by a French team, it's funded by French people, but it's all set in London. But because the team are all French, it's easier to shoot it in France, easier and cheaper to shoot it in France,
even
I guess.
Even though so London is here.
Yeah. It would have helped me, or easier for them, not easier for me, 100% not easier for me. But surprisingly easy, as just jumped on the Eurostar and it's like, all right, it's quicker to get to Paris than it is to Manchester. Didn't think about that.
I went to Belgium to do a gig the other week, and it took me an hour and 52 minutes to get from London to Belgium. When you consider that to get a train from my nearest train station, Chester, to London is 2 hours and 20.
Yeah, it's stupid. Mad, isn't it?
Stupid. We've got different countries and everything.
Disgusting.
So I shouldn't have mentioned that, as there'll be now demand for progress events all around Europe because it's as easy as getting to Manchester.
Bring it on. They won't listen anyway.
What's not commonly known is that you can't take a van full of merchant equipment on the Eurostar.
Yeah.
Can you not? No, we when we did that show in Cologne. Hello, by the way.
I'll intro you in a minute. You can be anonymous until this point. Keep talking.
Who could it be?
When we did that show in Cologne, I drove a van with the camera crew and one wrestler. From London to Cologne and back.
Who was the wrestler?
Mike Bird.
Nice.
And it took a long time. We went on the Eurotunnel freight service because they wouldn't let us take a van on the passenger service.
That's interesting, because we've got away with it a few times, but when we've got search, we've had to claim it's promotional material.
Right, see, I called them.
Again, rather than drugs.
Like... six boxes of merch. This is all to give away. We're just charitable. We're driving to Europe to throw t-shirts at people.
No wrestler has ever done that when travelling to America, ever.
That's the reason that we had to go on the freight, because we said they asked what's in the van. And they're like, oh, it's merchandise and equipment. And she's like, are you selling it? I was like, yes. Then you've got to go freight. So we ended up on this Eurotunnel freight service. Yeah. Crazy. It took a long time. It took like 11 hours to get there.
Oh, wow.
13 to get there, 11 to get back.
It's because you made a mistake, mate. You meant to drive onto a train and then go through the tunnel. You drove through the tunnel by the sounds of it.
What?
That's how long it would take.
That's guest two. That's my business partner, John Briley, who, I mean, conservatively has 27 different types of drugs in front of him to get him through this.
Or legal.
Yeah.
Allegedly. Promotional drugs.
So, John messaged me. I asked John to do this last week. John messaged me the other day and said, I've lost my voice a little bit. I don't know if I'm able to do it. And then a couple of days later, was like, nope, I'm definitely doing it. I'll just be a bit huskier than normal. Now, regular listeners to Tuesday Night Joel will note that John's voice has been rated as incredibly relaxing / sexy by many people.
Yeah.
Mainly because I think they're probably just, if you watch Progress, you're sick of hearing my voice and you very rarely hear John's. So, you're even sexier than normal today.
Yeah.
Good times.
And
he's bought notes as well, written on a piece of paper. Written on a piece of paper that I note he stole from one of the meeting rooms we used to book Progress shows.
The one in Liverpool, yeah.
The one in Liverpool, yeah. Which, are you still working your way through biscuits and tea and coffee that you stole from there?
The biscuits have all gone.
Right, but the tea and coffee still remains.
I keep the sachets for when I run out of coffee.
Nice.
Honestly, because I don't know how much we pay for the meeting room for like a day.
Enough to justify taking the biscuits. Yeah.
But honestly, like, he brings a separate bag and he's just sweeping whole tables full of stuff into his bag as he leaves. Brings nothing else with him.
Fill a promotional tea and coffee.
Promotional, socially acceptable drugs.
Yeah. Our final guest is a wrestler who last night did a wrestle and has a fairly interesting story about how he's ended up here.
It's true.
At 11 o'clock in the morning. It's Eddie Dennis. Hello, Eddie.
Hi, what's occurring? Do you want to hear the story now?
Yeah, so bearing in mind, normally we'd record this on, when we did roundtables in the past, it had been a Tuesday afternoon to enable me to get from the
north.
Would
have been much more convenient.
But because... because I've got a super busy week with my family, I needed to get it done today, and I asked Acast, I went, when can we have the studio? And they were like, in the morning. I was like, okay, that's difficult. So I've stayed in the hotel. You've explained your trials and tribulations watching the show. John lives in London, so presumably not as stressful for John. From my point of view, I booked myself into a hotel in London last night, around the corner from Acast, so I could watch the show before... watch the show and not have to get up immediately after the show finished and drive it. So I thought I was pretty smart about it. And then I asked Eddie to do the show, and he desperately wanted to come and do it. However, not that easy.
Things went awry is what happened, Jim. Things went severely awry yesterday evening. So I wrestled on the Attack Pro show in Cardiff last night, which was real good. We always do them before the big four shows, and then the pay-per-view runs afterwards. So we normally do it in Walkabout. We stay in the same venue for the after show. We didn't do Walkabout this time, so we did a different venue. So the after party was in a bar called Shooters, which I would implore every listener to never visit when they go to Cardiff, for reasons I will go on to explain. I wrestled Mark Davis of Aussie Open. It was good fun. We had like a clash of heads early in the match, which led to a cut on my chin. I didn't think much of it, but it wouldn't stop bleeding, so we nipped. Chuck Mambo kindly drove me to A&E, and we, first of all, so we were in A&E during the start of Survivor Series, and I was real distressed wanting to, because I wanted to watch the show, you know, because I told Jim that I would watch the show. But it turns out that there's Wi-Fi in the A&E in Cardiff University Hospital. So that was terrific. So we got to use the Wi-Fi on my mobile phone to watch Survivor Series, which means that for like, we'll talk about the show, but I thought the first match was terrible because I didn't have any sound. Wrestling without sound sometimes is really bad.
It's really
exposing, you know, and the sound kind of covers things up. So it didn't have any sound. So we watched it on my mobile phone. Ended up getting out. A&E was great. They stitched me up. Ended up getting out and getting the getting driven to the Shooters bar. So like, oh, great, we'll watch Brock and AJ, and we'll watch the big five man in the bar with everyone, get a couple of drinks, good fun. We get to the bar at like 2:30, and the guy won't let us in. He's like, licensing laws, I can't let anyone in after 1:00. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, it's 3:00 in the morning. You've got 100 people in your bar who all came to watch me wrestle this evening.
The
fact that we put on a show is the only reason you have a full bar of people tonight. And I just went to get stitched. Like, I just went to the hospital because I was wrestling, because I was trying to entertain the people who are here for you now. But they wouldn't let us in. So we still couldn't watch the show. So we went back to Jim Lee, the ring announcer for Attack's hotel room in Cardiff, and watch a show. And by this point, I'm conscious of the fact that my megabus is at 4:30 a.m. So I've really got to try and get through this pay-per-view pretty quick, sharpish, so I can get my megabus. We did get through it in the travel lodge, and then I walked to the bus stop and hopped on a bus and had a sleep on the megabus. And then who'd have known it? Wi-Fi on megabus is good enough to stream the WWE Network. So I could have just not worried about it. You could just watch it on the bus. I had 4 hours to kill.
Yeah.
And just sat there and watched it on the bus.
Everyone else on the bus going, why can I not get my emails?
Yeah.
Someone's tying up all the time.
The back is using up all the bandwidth. Yeah, so then I got here, so I haven't had really much of a sleep. But I have watched most of the show. Saves one or two matches.
And we'll cover for you when you haven't watched them, mate.
Thanks.
It's not a problem.
I apologise for the coughing, listeners.
It's all right, mate. It's fine. So we're gonna do Takeover first, then Survivor Series. Before we get into both of them, I'm gonna ask you all a question that requires some thought. And I saw my friend Merlin on Twitter today tweeted this question about choosing your ideal Survivor Series team, right? Your ideal 5-person Survivor Series team can be using any wrestlers ever, ever, ever. 2 main eventers, 1 mid-carder, and a tag team in a Survivor Series team. Who would we all choose in our ideal Survivor Series team? Oh, wait, I've sprung this on you, because then I want the most natural responses. So, yeah. Anyone want to volunteer to go first? I've not thought about mine at all.
I'll jump in and go. I've not thought of it yet, but I'll go completely. I'll just work through, as you said, and go through my instant reaction. My instant reaction on tag team was a Legion of Doom, because they're just a great looking Survivor Series team, aren't they?
Yeah.
Just look beastly. And my instant first reaction of main eventer was Shawn Michaels.
Nice.
So I'd have Legion of Doom and Shawn Michaels. And then I reckon I'd go... I've been watching... back a lot of Flair recently, and I know, obviously, I've always known Flair's great, but he's just in my mind a lot at the moment. So I'd add Flair. So I need one more. I need a mid-carder.
Unless you're using like early 90s Shawn Michaels, then he can count as your mid-carder.
Oh, yes. Nice.
Good shout, man. Hey. That's a good shout.
Hey.
No, I'll keep him. I'll keep him as my main eventer, because I wouldn't want to be without. you see. One of the games that we were playing last night was trying to list every profession that has been used in wrestling.
Yeah.
So now I've just got countless people there, and the one that we couldn't decide quite what his profession was, so I'm going to go for him. It's just Coco Beware, just man that owns a parrot was his profession. So I'm going to sling Coco Beware in there.
Parrot fancier.
Parrot fancier.
Have you ever been on holiday and there's just people wandering up and down the beach just with an animal,
Coming up to you going,
your photo taken with my animal.
Yeah,
Essentially was Coco Beware's job. Coco Beware, incidentally, was a really good heel in Memphis.
Really?
Because everyone remembers him as being... having the best named finisher in WWF at the time in the late 80s, which was the Ghostbuster Suplex.
Amazing. Yeah.
Just brilliant. A brilliant name. It's just a brainbuster. He was just kind of very, especially when he was in the tag team with Owen Hart, he was kind of just happy, smiley baby face.
Yeah.
But he was a really, really good heel in the mid-80s. He was like feuding people like Jerry Lawler. And you go back and watch that and go, is this the same dude? It's like watching people in WWF compared to when they're in Stampede. It's nuts. Good choice.
So that was complete just stream of consciousness, no consideration put into it, but I like it. I'll stand by it.
Coco Beware being eliminated after 20 seconds.
Yeah, of course. You need that.
Either of you chaps want to go next?
Bullet Club.
Nice. There's a man conserving his voice.
Yeah, nice. There's more than five members. So
yeah, which five? Cody, Kenny, five. Marty, and the Young Bucks.
Nice.
Lovely.
Whizzed straight through that, didn't he?
Look at that. Straight in. Also, I'd like to think that me and Eddie can't use anyone that's already been used now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so.
Sorry.
Damn. I wasn't going to go with the Bullet Club, jeez. But the Legion of Doom on the other side. I will go with. My two favourite childhood wrestlers, Sting and the Ultimate Warrior. Nice. So like early 90s Sting with his bleach blonde hair, and Ultimate Warrior circa WrestleMania 6. And then I'm going to bend the rules slightly because I would have gone Legion of Doom and then a mid-carder with face paint because I like the aesthetic of them all having face paint.
Come on, powers of paint.
But instead, what I'll do is I'll forego my mid-carder and stick Demolition in with them, all three of them.
Nice. Oh, nice. Nice.
That way they've all got face paint.
You see, I quite...
Which is my main requirement for this team.
I quite enjoy when there's a team like that and they have the one that didn't have face paint and he has to put on face paint to fit in the photo. That's always a fun thing to have that one that's like, I'm dressed up today. It's great. I'm part of the gang. I love
like
it.
Like Roderick Strong.
Yeah, exactly like Roderick. Yeah, yeah,
like Roderick.
It's like, oh, look. You've all been to the same military surplus store.
Good work, guys.
And we'll get to it, but when he walked out, I imagined under that mask him just beaming. Just like, look at me outfit.
Actually, that is, knowing Roddy, that is probably exactly what he was doing.
He's a very happy man.
So, mine. I can't use anyone that anyone's used so far. I would have Brock Lesnar. Because it's Brock Lesnar in it.
Mm-hmm. Great choice.
You'd win that way too.
Yeah. No one's winning ever. I would have Brock Lesnar, Triple H, early 1990s Cactus Jack when he was still a mid-carder.
Nice.
And the tag team I would have would be Vader and Stan Hansen.
Wow. That's a team no one would want to wrestle, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just the team is just called Ouch. There's mine. Let us know what yours is. Hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw at Jim Smallman.
Just while we're on that subject of teams, and we'll get into Survivor Series a lot because I know both of us are big, or all of us, I'm sure, are big fans of the Survivor Series match, which was nice there was two this time. But I was watching the 2 hour pre-show and just at the beginning of it Pete Dunne posted a picture of him and Trent and Tyler and Wolfgang and Mark on the ramp, and I just thought, why didn't the pre-show have a few small Survivor Series matches? It's the fact that there was five of them stood there, and I was like, well, there's a Survivor Series team there.
Yeah,
we could have had a pre-show of them against a 205 live. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought, a 205 live one. It's like, that would have been lovely. It's all good, but if it's a 1 hour pre-show, I understand that. But when it is a 2 hour one, you're like, they're literally there.
Yeah,
you could have told them an hour before, and they're good enough to have put a match together in like that brief time. But yeah,
what match did they put on the pre-show?
There were three matches on the pre-show. There was Elias against Matt Hardy. There was Kalisto against Enzo Amore, and there was Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens against Breezango / Febreze, the better name. It was a good pre-show, actually. I find the pre-shows odd because I tend to watch them normally after I've watched the actual pay-per-view, but last night I actually watched it live.
Yeah.
And it was only, I was looking through Twitter, I was sat in a hotel room with no windows, and I've been there writing all day, and I'm just like going a bit mad. I'd already watched TakeOver, and I was going a bit mad, and I was looking through Twitter and people were saying, oh right, so the pre-show's starting now at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I was like, I should probably get this show on the road and then put in wrestling after having a break of about an hour.
My plan was to have a nap in between travelling from France and going around my mates and watching the wrestling, and then I saw the pre-show was at 10. I was like, well, we need to get NXT in. I want to watch a bit of Riptide. I'll come over now. So I went over like 5 and we just started then. And
yeah, it was
11 hours of wrestling. It was good. So, it was great fun.
I yeah. There was a point yesterday where I was thinking, I've got to watch all this wrestling. I'm going to be sick of wrestling by the end of it. Nope, wasn't.
I've been in a town in France, though, that's not got great Wi-Fi, and this little village, it hasn't even got a shop.
You make it sound like it's the sort of place, a bit like Footloose, that's band dancing.
It is that kind of place. The guy in the hotel, he does our dinner every night, and literally, we just... Our dinner every night is what he decides is our dinner every night. There's not a menu. It's just, are you coming down for dinner? It's like, yep. Here you go. Here's your dinner. So,
do you have any dietary requirements? Because I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't have had too much wrestling at that point. I've not been able to watch anything all this week in the build-up to it. So, yeah, I was like, all right, let's start at five then. Let's
that's making me think is, how did they manage to dress this village up like London?
No, that's it. That's the weird thing. We're shooting an hour away from the village.
There's got to be an Angus steakhouse in the background.
Yeah, it's truly unusual.
Anyone ever eaten an Angus steakhouse?
I have once.
What was it like?
Shit.
Damning indictment.
Yeah,
be hearing from the people. Take that, Angus. Well, I hope they're not one of ACAS sponsors this week.
We're gonna be hearing from Angus.
Not anymore.
Right then. So to take over, which was, let's be honest, really, really good.
It's cracking, wasn't it?
Spoilers, it's dead good. Really good. It's a really good show with... But I don't think there's ever been a bad takeover.
No.
They're in that... I suppose they've got that unfortunate thing now of everything... If they ever have a show that's just fairly good, it's good. People are going to be like, what's happened? Because every takeover is always really, yeah, really, really strong. There's something I quite enjoy about only having five matches,
yeah,
and it being a couple of hours long as well. It's quite nice.
It makes every match seem important.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Well done, reasonable man. So, we'll do it in order. First match, Lars Sullivan, Cassius Ohno. Which was all about, like, so we've seen a lot of Lars Sullivan this year because we've seen a lot of NXT shows this year.
We have, yes.
And he's, first of all, he's such a nice bloke. Like, just to let you be on the curtain, just slightly, he's one of the nicest human beings walking the face of the earth.
He's intelligent, a gentleman as well, right? I've seen a few bits of he's very articulate and all that. It's kind of, I don't want him to be.
Well, so
I want him to just be a big idiot. That's kind of...
He's really smart. He's really, really polite. He's very... talking to him is like talking to Timothy Thatcher.
Yes.
So if you've ever met Timothy Thatcher at the Merch Stand at Progress or any other indie show...
You haven't met Timothy Thatcher at the Merch Stand.
You haven't, because he doesn't really do it. But Timothy Thatcher, when you see him, it's like... He's a terrifyingly hard man.
Yeah.
But when you meet him, he's like, hello, sir, how are you? And he's just really nice.
Brilliant.
He's so nice. Like when we did Alexandra Palace, he just stood in the same place pre-show. While we were working everything out, he stood in the same place for 3 hours and didn't move. Just said hello to people.
We could have put a GoPro on his head and done one of those time-lapse things of the setup.
He just doesn't move. And Lars Sullivan is a very similar kind of guy. And he's someone who wanted to be a wrestler for years and was involved in various sort of weightlifting things and stuff like that, and then one day just went, because I don't think he's not the youngest of relatively new wrestlers,
no,
but works really hard. And we watched him wrestle Oney Lorcan quite a lot this year,
yeah,
and he just murders Oney,
yeah.
And it's brilliant to watch because every time he wrestled Oney he got a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And I think what they've done with Lars is, I remember, everyone remembers Baron Corbin's push in NXT,
yeah,
and fans went from being really, really excited about this bloke who had this amazing move, looked brilliant, had this amazing move, and then all of a sudden they turned on him and just went, no, we don't like you now, because yeah, you're winning matches in 10 seconds and we don't like it. When what they seem to be doing with Lars is just gradually giving him, and this match is only 5 minutes long,
yeah,
but they've been giving him longer and longer and longer and longer and giving him better opponents. And yeah, he still massively dominated Cassius Ohno, but Ohno looked decent. You know, no one looked bad coming out of this. It wasn't just a squash.
Yeah.
And I think the longer the matches go, Lars still looked good in them. He doesn't look out of place.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he doesn't know
completely
what he's doing.
Agree.
He looks great. And yeah. I see only... the thing I really like about him is he looks like an old school heel character from the 1950s.
Yeah.
In the... He's just this big barrel-chested monster. He looks like someone like Killer Kowalski.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
And I like that old-school sort of mentality.
I like this a lot as a match-up because Ohno feels like someone who, at the moment, they haven't particularly got a big storyline behind him or anything big, but he's a big name, a very respected name. So that felt like a great natural progression for Lars Sullivan as a step up of like, right, we're not going to damage Ono at the moment to have him a loser battle here, but it's a good step, and yeah, I thought it was a perfect choice.
It was good for Ono too, because he wrestles like a traditional babyface on NXT, really, so he like gets beaten down and stuff, and sometimes it looks a little bit awkward because he's so much bigger than a lot of the heels that he wrestles on NXT. So he gets like beaten down, and then every time he hits him, he looks like he murders him.
Because
his strikes are so good, and then you're left thinking like, I'm really bi that you'd get beaten up by this dude, because every time you hit him, you look like you're killing him, and you're way bigger than him. Do you know what I mean? So Lars is such a big man that when he put a beat down on Ono, Ono could actually sell for him, and it looked good. Like, and there was sympathy for Ono when he came back and run his big flurry of strikes at the end.
And also, all those strikes look great.
No one does strike sequences like
he's amazing. Best.
I mean, to be fair as well, I mean, Lars was laying in the strikes, and it was almost Japanese in places watching it. You were just like, all right, cool, we're going to kill each other.
Yeah.
Awesome, great, I'm fine with that.
Put Lars over super strong.
Yeah.
Was obviously the purpose of the match, I guess.
Yeah, I think Lars has probably got I'm always aware, you know, when you notice someone's knee brace, like he wears the biggest knee
brace.
It's
heavy, right?
I think I've ever, like, it's Austin in the very late 90s early noughties level of massive knee brace. And I don't know if that's something that could potentially be a problem going forward, but
we discussed it a lot last night and came out with the theory that that's how he gets his powers. If he took his knee brace off, his knee would get huge and the rest of him would shrink down. But but covering that is sending that just huge, gigantic swollenness all through his body.
Did Austin get his powers from the knee braces too?
Yep, that's a fact.
Where can we get these knee braces from?
So
you have to recharge them in the back before you go out to wrestle.
Yeah. So knee brace shopping list.
The comparison with Baron Corbin is quite interesting, I think, because... like, I thought that Lars actually took quite a lot of offense in this match, which is something that Corbin never did early on in his when they introduced him. I think there's quite a clear lesson has been learnt there, and to have Lars take quite a lot of offense at this stage and show that he can take it as well, I think probably makes him even more credible going forward when he gets into longer matches and better opponents. And not that there's anything wrong with Ono, obviously, but that was interesting to see that the writers and the creative learning from that from a couple of years ago,
because you can look like a monster and a beast without just squashing people in many ways. You look even more so if you've taken a beating and then you just hit your finisher and it's over. That just shows even more that even if you're on the back foot, you just need one shot and they're done. That made him look even stronger in many ways, that this was a back and forth match and then it was just over, it was just done, that's it.
Putting him in there with Ono as well, like the NXT audience will like it as a match, because Ono's offense looks so good, even if even if something had gone a little bit awry or something, the second he hits his first big strike, they'll be right back into it, because the second he hits 100%. The first big boot or the first elbow, everyone will be invested again, because it gets the whole room unglued every time he strikes someone.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, it's I was looking forward to that match partly because I really like Ono. As regular fans of Progress will be aware, he's one of my favourite wrestlers in the world and has been for years. But also, again, I just think I'm interested to see what they've learnt with how to push a monster, because pushing a monster now is different. And we'll get to Braun Strowman later on, but how they've done things with Braun Strowman, there's no resentment over his push.
No.
In the same way that there has been resentment over Roman Reigns' push.
Yeah, interesting that, isn't it?
And you know, if anything, Braun Strowman's been pushed even quicker than Roman Reigns was.
But Strowman's push has been at the cost of municipal vehicles rather than any people. So it's been defeating a garbage van, an ambulance, you know, just all sorts of different things. That's a great one to get over.
Committing a attempted murder.
Yeah, repeatedly. Yeah.
As the as Progress's budget man, I'd be interested to know what the cost benefit sort of ratio would be for pushing someone using vehicles that cannot be saved versus wages of a wrestler.
Which
is more efficient.
Yeah, yeah.
Good God.
And let's just make sure that John never gets that information. Just for fear of what could happen
in
Progress.
The next Progress show is just wrestlers versus cars.
a wrestler flipping a second-hand Skoda. Got a really good deal on this.
Bought this Astra for 50 quid. Do what I want with it.
Oh God.
I did buy a car for 50 quid once.
Did you?
Mm.
How long did it last?
A couple of years.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you never drive it?
No, I drive it every day.
What was it?
Ford Fiesta.
Can't imagine you owning a car.
Why?
Because you've never owned a car in all the time I've known you. Because you live in London and there's no point.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
I sold a Fiesta, I think it was.
Was it 50
to
quid?
To a guy called it was only like 100 quid, 150, but it was to a kid I worked with in a record store, and I got a phone call from at 1 o'clock saying, so I've put it in first gear and what do I do now? Bring the clutch up. It turns out he couldn't drive and he'd bought it and was learning to drive it at 1 o'clock in his local area. It was just ringing me going, I lift up the clutch and it just stops and I'm like, well, you need to give it a bit of get. And I was like, don't ring me. I started giving over the phone driverless. Like, what's going on here? That wasn't part of the deal.
It's not like buying a MacBook. You can't visit a genius every time something goes wrong.
Yeah. It's outrageous. Oh,
What's the cheapest car we've all ever bought? If you do 50 quid.
Yeah, I can't beat that.
I bought a car for 400 quid when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Didn't last long.
Mm.
Cheapest car you've ever bought?
I bought one for about 100 quid, and the one after that was about 150 quid. I was just cheap cars for years. Originally, I was like, just buy cheap cars until they die.
Yep.
I had a Daihatsu Domino, which was... I rung up to get it insured, and the motor, it had a half a litre engine.
Half a litre
engine, and I rang them up to it's half a litre, and they said, oh, a litre and a half, and I was like, no 500 cc, and they're like, oh, it's a bike. I'm like, no, it's a car. 500 and yeah, I had to get that insured. And the one I had after that, I don't know what the roof was made out of, but you could push your finger through it. And we found it, like, everyone I worked with just claimed it was made out of paper or cardboard, because you could kind of just, if you thumbed a little bit, you could just push your finger through the roof.
My God.
So yeah, I've had some great cars.
Did you buy a convertible?
No, it wasn't. It ended up as a convertible. Because of boredom, just pick holes in the roof.
Which was air punching, yeah. Music.
I sold it as a convertible.
Do you drive, Eddie?
I don't drive, never have drive, never bought a car, so £0, I win.
Fair play. Good arguments. Good work, guys. Next up is a match that John Briley's written an essay about already.
Brilliant.
It's Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream, which, according to people who tweeted me about it last night, is many people's match of the year. It's not mine, but it's about second. It's either second or third, because another match on this show might also be second or third.
Yeah.
After Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate and TakeOver Chicago. So I had people messaging me saying, oh, I didn't expect that to be really good, and it was really good. Now, on one hand, one person in this match is one of my friends. Mm-hmm. So I always expect his matches to be good, because I know how seriously Mr. Black takes wrestling very, very seriously, and doesn't tend to have many bad matches. Also, I knew it was going to be good because, again, having been to a lot of NXT house shows in particular this year, ranging from really small ones in Florida in front of 200, 300 people to ones in this country and ones on the East Coast of America, Velveteen Dream is really, 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 really good.
Yeah.
And is potentially the second coming of Shawn Michaels. Mm-hmm. Like, that good.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
That's what I'd read someone say, that he's got that. It was someone like Meltzer or someone who's often up and down on WWE, products as saying exactly that. And it made me pay him a lot more attention because I'd started to watch him and been a bit, I'm not sure, I'm a massive Prince fan and there's a lot of dodgy Prince reference and things like that. I was like, and then as soon as I heard that, I started paying attention and yeah, I absolutely adored this match and the build, everything.
So the build was great. It was interesting because how the match came off, Velvet's injury was pretty much the babyface for quite a lot of it because the crowd had just gone, no, we like him.
Yeah.
We know he acts like a bit of a dick, but we like him now.
Yeah.
So, and I think making something as simple as one wrestler refusing to acknowledge the other because he doesn't think he's worthy.
Yeah.
Into a storyline that lasts several weeks and then the biggest point of a great match like that was just awesome. And I think that it's great character development for someone like Velveteen Dream because you could imagine him as a babyface, you can imagine him as a heel. The arrogance and stuff like that in his persona suits him being a heel, but wrestling's not what wrestling was 20 years ago. So he can be a babyface and be arrogant. It's perfectly acceptable. Yeah. You know, it's easy to do. But I think the character development for Aleister Black's really cool as well because for someone who doesn't speak very often, and the whole point of his gimmick is that he doesn't really say anything and kicks your head off.
Mm.
For him to his character to grow in this with him not even speaking is everything about it is really, really cool. And the other thing that people were tweeting me about it was, I hope it doesn't end. I don't think it will. If it's done right, you can see them coming back to this. Like, they'll probably go off to do different things now, but then they could come back to it again.
Yeah.
And they could go back. And it could end up being a rivalry akin to someone like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn's rivalry that they had for years.
Yeah.
Because the chemistry that they've got in the ring together is
absolutely
awesome. I messaged Aleister Black just to say, that was well good, wasn't it? And he went, oh, thank you very much. And then told me he was playing Skyrim on his Nintendo Switch, which made me realise that knowing how addicted he is to Skyrim, that's probably all he did all weekend.
Yeah.
And probably didn't even plan a match that good. So what's in your essay, boss?
Oh, right. So, I like you say with wrestling that you get out of it what you bring to it, right? So for me,
giant foam fingers.
Yeah, yeah. I often go. I go home from wrestling shows with a massive sign.
Yeah.
So this was a story about growing up and trying to earn the respect of not exactly like a father figure, but not quite like a bigger brother, little brother thing either.
Well, because they did keep bringing that up on commentary that it's just so hard not to call him Tommy, but. That Aleister Black has got 12, 13 years experience. And Velveteen Dream is 22 years old and has been wrestling for 3 years.
That's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
That's incredible considering how good it was.
They made a point in the hype video of repeating the line a couple of times that it was Aleister Black saying, you do not acknowledge a child that's throwing a tantrum, or I will not acknowledge a child that's throwing a tantrum for attention. So that's, going into the match, that phrase was, sorry.
Sorry. John's meant to be getting up now.
that phrase was in my head. There was that dynamic to it. I thought that the opening to the match, where the commentators were putting over that they were surprised that it wasn't a strike battle, and because that's obviously what Black does, but when he was just kind of tying him up,
they just out-wrestled him, didn't he?
I really felt it was almost like a mother dog sort of trying to control a pup, just by controlling the child without actually hurting them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, I'm in charge here.
Yeah,
you've gone deep with this, man.
That is
deep, isn't it?
So
if you want to know why progress is the way it is, this is why.
Yeah. So I took that from it, that Black was basically just trying to impose his authority in a parental kind of way without being the father figure. I think that the two characters are much more similar than people might actually think. They look like they're opposites, but actually, like, Aleister Black is an outsider, but he's just decided what his path is. and Velveteen is an outsider as well, looking for recognition in the way that he presents it. They're on the same curve, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When's your book coming out?
Starting to realise why you liked it so much now.
I did say that I had an awful lot to say about this.
Yeah. It's all good, but it is all good stuff. And I've known you for a long time. I know this is often how you think about wrestling.
Well, quite often I don't think about wrestling like this. This is like this. I just watch this on a completely different level to how I watch most. Yeah. Wrestling, and I don't know if it was that trigger phrase in the hype video of Rudy Child.
Could it maybe be all the cold and flu medication you're on?
I mean, it's entirely possible.
There wasn't even a unicorn in this match.
What? Don't listen to him, John. He's teasing you.
I think it's right though. I think it did have all this underlying stuff, and that's why it proved how invested you can get a crowd, which is what you saw on a 4-week build. This isn't months and months of back and forth. This is quite a new story still that they had all. It's quite a simple story as well. It just had all the pieces there, and the crowd were just going absolutely nuts for all of it, for the psychology of it, all the little exchanges and the mimicry that they did of each other's moves and the cross-legged and the crawling and all that kind of thing. It was like just it brought you into all that. So I think that is all that much underlying. So even if people weren't getting that, that's why it was so easy to get invested
what
in.
What did Alistair do when Velveteen? So he's sitting in the cross leg. Velveteen slides in, sort of like the hip thrust position.
Yeah,
he's like, acknowledge me, say my name. And Alistair's like looking awkwardly at the crowd, selling it real good, like he's a little bit put out by it.
Yeah.
And then Velveteen switches to the seated position.
Yeah.
And then there's a huge pop from the crowd, and the hard camera refuses to pan to Alistair. So he's done something which they're not happy with. And then he's adjusted to the standard sort of arched cat stretch position. And then hard cams panned over, and he's doing that in Velveteen's
face. I think
face.
He was just going into that position, and that's what got the pop.
But
the camera was just a bit slow to get to it.
No, because it's live. Like, I don't think. I just think it was because they finished. They missed the Black Mass as well.
I think it was just
a bad edit. Because it's live, you can't really get around it.
And we had that again. We'll get to it in the main event though. There was also a moment that they missed on camera that they then back referenced on commentary, saying apparently this happened at the same time, and it was like, right, well, you kind of saw thing. yeah the double throw is like all synchronized, and that would have been this people shot, but yeah, it was a live event with some awesome
there was
stuff going
stuff in,
on
there was a thing in the main event they definitely tried to keep the camera away from for quite some time.
But also, do you think any camera issues there were influenced by the having to have two rings, so only having three sides to work with?
Well, WWE ringside cameras are usually positioned in two places. They're on the corners of the ring nearest the hard cam.
Yeah. Right.
And then they shoot into the ring on a diagonal. If you've got that other ring on one side, that cameraman has half the amount of movement that he would normally
have.
Yeah. So yeah, possibly.
It would have definitely affected it because essentially when they use the left side ring as you look at hard cam, then the right side Roma wouldn't have been able to run the line.
Yeah.
And when they used the right side ring, the left side Roma wouldn't have been able to run the line.
And it's not something that they have a lot of practice in, because this match hasn't been, the War Games match hasn't been done for so long.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know.
Hardcam hardly ever pulled to show both rings, didn't it? Very rarely did they pull.
They did have a couple of interesting shots that you very rarely get, which is they had two hardcams, one lined up for each ring.
Yeah.
Occasionally they would show the hard cam that wasn't directly in front of the ring, just to give a slight kind of angle. I thought that was interesting. This is someone who looks at video editing of wrestling a lot.
I really like the fact that this match, so a lot of people were saying to me, this is match of the year. There's not tons of moves in it. It's not moves. So a lot of people love Pete and Tyler from TakeOver Chicago, which comparatively to a lot of WWE matches
is
very, very moves heavy.
Sure.
And it's an indie match on a WWE show, which is one of the reasons it blew people's minds so much, because we're around indie wrestling all the time. We know how cool indie wrestling is, but a WWE crowd, takeover crowds are a little bit different, but a WWE crowd as a rule is very, very different, because it's especially if you go to a big show like WrestleMania or Survivor Series or whatever, people like WWE for different reasons. We like it because we're wrestling fans, but there's people who only like WWE and don't invest in anything outside of it, so sometimes when they see stuff that's different, it blows their mind. What's interesting about this match, and so many people going it's their match of the year, is this is one of the most WWE matches it's possible to have, because it's completely. All about, you can't really have a match like this on the indies, because you need cameras and you need to have television storytelling build to get to this match, which you can't necessarily do on an indie show.
Yeah, but that's again that's the thing that I think a lot of indie fans forget and overlook, how powerful that can be, the psychology of it. And you guys had it with when Ginny finally squared up against Allura the Mateo, just them standing in the ring together had people on their feet, and that's all it took, because that story had been built so well. You got that psychology of, right, they've not done tons of cool indie moves yet everyone's like buzzing because it's been such a long and good build, and that's a really important part of wrestling. And again, we'll get to that, like we saw that at some of the things in Survivor Series. I thought some bits that I wasn't that excited about, I was like, by just people standing in the same ring together, just was the one of the biggest pops for me of the night. And it's like, oh, I hadn't thought about how exciting it would be to see this person looking at this person. That's all it took. Yeah. And it's an underrated bit sometimes in indie wrestling fans of great moves.
It's one of those, obviously this podcast always tries to be positive, and it's one of those things that I think sometimes we forget that whenever I defend stuff that happens in WWE, I always like to point out that we find it hard writing as many shows as we write, and we do two a month, and it's hard.
Yeah,
I know there's only three of us, but it's still hard. WWE put 10-11 hours of content out a week, so not everything's going to hit. But when something does hit like this, and people are losing their minds over it, again, you have to remember that this is the sort of thing that could only really happen in a televised wrestling product, to make people as excited. You could have that match on an indie show and it'd be great, but to have the real excitement about the build about it and having HD cameras right in their faces when they're talking to each other and stuff like that, that's the thing that is where we should appreciate product like WWE, because a lot of people are like, no, I don't like WWE, I like the indies, but this is the sort of thing that gives the exact example of how they can do stuff amazingly.
And that's what I think jumps out to me is the crossover of that, though. It's the reason Pete and Tyler was so exciting on a WWE show is the same reason that the stuff Eddie's doing at the moment is so exciting on an indie show, because he's doing these amazing stories and videos that's really getting you invested. And with often people
typically TV wrestling,
or people assume you can't do that because you're not on TV, but it's using social media and going, no, I'm going to tell these stories and build this in that way, and people are going rightfully nuts for it, because it's like, right, oh, we're not used to that in indie wrestling. Are we used to, oh, this great person against this great person and seeing what they can do on the day?
Well, people are used to promoters' dream matches, which is
completely,
don't get me wrong,
which is wicked.
I love going to the cracking odd show where it's like, oh, there's two people I really want to see wrestle each other, but the ethos,
and you guys have even done it a couple of times,
absolutely,
right? Joe and Rampage and stuff,
and like, sometimes
they're just dream matches,
and sometimes we'll do, like, because if we've got seven matches on a show, three or four of them might have a story to them, three or four might not, you know, and because we've got to still remember an indie company and give that side of it, but there's nothing wrong with having storyline development and having people.
Yeah,
you know, look at how angry the world was with you, what you did at Alexandra Palace.
Yeah,
people were
true.
Absolutely wanted to kill you.
Twitter was unglued.
Yeah,
positively unglued.
And it's what I like is it seems like it's the realization of indie wrestlers that they can take control of these storylines in a way across companies, rather than being, oh, I turn up and get told I'm a heel or a face. People like Zach Gibson has built that fantastic thing that wherever he goes, bar a couple of companies, he can be this horrendous villain that everyone loves to boo, and that feels like that's the wrestlers taking control of that themselves, rather than going, oh, I'm just going here and this is an individual night and that's that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Telling their own storylines across promotions.
Yeah. I mean,
which is great.
When you talk about like positives and negatives of independent wrestling against like a WWE product, then certainly most independent wrestlers would massively put
their artistic influence
yeah.
as a huge positive for independent
yeah.
wrestling.
100%,
of
yeah.
like, you know, you can exactly what you're saying, you can put
take
it together
that control, yeah.
different, you know, and you can decide whether you want this to be something which is standalone to one organization or whether it's something which you want to cross over different places mm. and you
also
can do that in different ways, can't
yeah.
you?
As well, I mean, speaking as promoters, like, I don't think we've ever come up with an idea that wouldn't suit a wrestler and just gone, no, we need to put a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
this
yeah,
needs
yeah, yeah.
to happen. It always feels that
collaborative.
Most things we do are collaborative and fairly organic. Most of the time, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
Reverse battle royal.
the thing about this match that I think was the best is which is kind of obvious, but as the match is going on, I was just concerned a bit because, similar to yourself, like, I would consider Alistair a friend, and like, as the thing is going on, as good as it is, the only thing that's concerning to me is like, man, Velveteen's coming out like a absolute megastar from this,
mm.
and Alistair isn't, or, you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to go up, and when he goes up, I'm not sure where he goes next, because he basically made Velveteen a star in this mm. in this whole program mm. and in the way they've put the match together. And as it's getting towards the back end, I'm thinking, as long as he acknowledges him at the end, he'll get them right back. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
as long
yeah.
as he acknowledges him. And I was like, and we get to the end and he's sitting there, and I'm getting excited because he's sitting there and Velveteen's like almost resting on his thigh. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he's
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
just
yeah.
like acknowledging him.
Yeah,
almost.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And,
like,
and,
a, like a puppy.
Like a little puppy. And
go.
I'm thinking to myself,
yep.
oh, they're going to do it. And all I'm thinking in my head is, because I really like promos and things,
yeah.
and all I'm thinking in my head is, the last line needs to be Velveteen Dream.
Yep.
What should he say
yeah.
in the build-up to Velveteen Dream? And like, mm. I'm like,
yeah,
you have my respect, Velveteen Dream, or whatever. But I'm thinking, you have my respect is not very Aleister Black,
no.
is it? You know, he's quite like, the language he uses is quite
yeah.
sort of cryptic, is a bit like gothic, and you
yeah.
know, there's he quite likes all of that sort of literature on Satanism and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That stuff quite fascinates him, right? As a human, and that line that he gave of like, what was it? Enjoy
your
infamy.
Yeah.
Enjoy infamy
was wonderful.
Velveteen Dream. Oh,
was it notoriety or infamy?
Infamy.
Which is, I mean, that's
great.
Just exquisite, isn't it? I think
yeah.
he goes straight out of this into a program with Almas.
Alistair. He wrestled Amos on his TakeOver debut.
Yeah. So mm. I think that's an organic place for him to go
yeah.
right now. And Velveteen can go anywhere.
So here's the thing, your whole point about Velveteen comes out of it looking a star. Velveteen was on Tough Enough, wasn't he?
He was
yeah.
to start with. And was let go because of his attitude, essentially. And then brought back into the fold and went to the Performance Center, etc. There is nothing that's going to stop him being a superstar. Ever.
Mm.
Because he's been under the WWE umbrella since he was 19 years old, and there's nothing that's going to stop him, because he's got all the tools. Like, he looks amazing, he's in amazing shape, he can do promos, he's got a good character, and he can wrestle, and he can, like, his selling's amazing.
Yeah.
Right? And that's where the Shawn Michaels comparison comes to me, in that
yeah.
your tech moves and looks like he's been killed.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if you're that good at selling, eventually a crowd's just going to go, I want to cheer for
him. Yeah.
Why? Because he's vaguely
yeah.
sympathetic. So, but I don't think there's anything. They could put him in with anyone, and he's going to end up looking like a superstar.
I love that him and Kairi Sane have both brought an elbow drop as a finishing move and made it look absolutely brutal again. Like,
yeah.
it really looks like a finisher. It annoys me that it's called the Purple Rainmaker, because
yeah.
the Rainmaker's a move.
Yeah.
It could have gone Purple Rain Drop or Purple Rain Falls or Purple Rain Shout. Like, there's so
yeah,
many options
purple
there.
Purple Rain.
Or just the Purple Rain,
yeah.
And it's like, well, don't use a great move's name and not do a variant of that move. That's the one bit that kind of annoys me a little bit.
I'm certain that'll be a rib on someone calling it the Purple Rainmaker. I'm certain.
Yeah.
Wrestling being the way it is.
Yeah.
I agree, though. Like, calling it, if his move was a ripcord into something, then Purple Rainmaker would make perfect sense.
Yeah.
It's a clever pun on Prince.
Yeah.
And it's also a variant of a ripcord into a move.
Yeah.
But calling it the Purple Rainmaker, and if he ever top of Elbow Drop, yeah. is just silly, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
I'd like him to have a move called the Purple Rainmaker yeah. that is something that's great, that is a rip, yeah. you know, is using that, but don't make it. I love, again, it's weird. I love the Elbow Drop. I love the name Purple Rainmaker. I just don't want them together.
It should just be a ripcord into a pose.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
like Dan in Street Fighter games. Just his special move should be a taunt.
Yeah, yeah.
Purple Raindrop is really a far better name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he jumps off the top.
Let's start this petition now.
Drops on them. Purple yeah. Raindrop. Hashtag Purple Raindrop.
yeah.
That last shot of the two of them, once they've done all the replays and stuff, and then they came, that last shot of Dream flat on the mat, yeah. pouring at him like a puppy, and Black sat there cross-legged with the mic. Again, comic book, one of my favourite films is Unbreakable,
yeah.
the M. Night Shyamalan
yeah, yeah, yeah.
film. And I got that from this, the relationship between the Bruce Willis character and the Samuel L. Jackson character
yeah.
from that. The fact that they're sat next to each other, both facing the same way, rather than opposite each other,
yeah.
to me says it's not as simple as good and evil.
Yeah.
It's the again. Yeah. It's that thing that I mentioned earlier about being on the same curve.
Yeah,
they're just
yeah, yeah.
on different ends of it.
Yeah.
And then Black giving him what he wants at the end, whilst simultaneously putting him down with that "Enjoy your infamy" line,
yeah.
was great. And then Velveteen has also achieved what he was wanting.
Yeah.
Despite taking an absolute kicking.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so good.
But hitting the best DDT I've seen in ages.
Yeah. I don't even. What do you call it? A dragon clutch DDT or something?
That's beautiful, isn't it?
I've no idea what to actually.
There used to be a guy in the indies who used to do it years ago, but
it's called Tommy End, was it?
But Damien Dunn did it for a while, and I've taken it a few times, and it's really difficult to take.
Hmm.
It's not easy to take because you're arched backwards, and then you're going to throw yourself into a front bump safe. Case scenario or a spike bump, the way that Tommy took it last night, and that's hard from like a back bridge to then throw yourself in that direction. Eesh, not and it looked incredible on the night.
Looked fantastic.
Looked like
and I like that.
What was that?
And yeah. I like that he teased it earlier, even though no one knew
what it was.
What it was. So that made that foreshadowing all the more exciting. It's like, oh wow, this is yeah.
I felt quite emotional after this match. I went for a walk.
Wow.
Genuinely. Like, a little bit teary.
It's great.
Wow, that'll be the drugs.
Wrestling can have that effect on you.
I do, weirdly, the wrestling occasionally, before I was involved in it, wrestling would occasionally make me emotional. Now it makes me emotional much more. But yeah. a lot of that is down to watching TV and going,
people, though, right?
I know that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Pete Dunne making his Raw debut, I got really emotional at that.
Yeah,
you know, and that's I was at that show. It's just like it's just really cool. Like, and there are things that I mean, any regular Progress viewer will be aware that John cries three times every Progress show, two times out of frustration and then one out of genuine yeah. emotion. But it is like it. There's nothing wrong with wrestling making people like
no,
that.
Completely.
That's the best
it.
Part of it, right?
Yeah.
I was fine all the way through Pete and Mark in the UK Championship tournament, and then on the pin, tucked his head in to speak to him, and I was gone then. That was it. That was me done. I had to take a minute.
Amazing.
It was great, basically. That is my favourite WWE match of the last 10 years.
Of the last 10 years?
Yeah. Wow.
That's awesome. Huge, isn't it?
Wow. More than CM Punk, John Cena?
Yeah, because nothing has affected me emotionally like that.
Wow. That's good, mate.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Good stuff.
Just going to go for a lie down now.
Yeah, you're going to have a lie down, mate. Next up was the title match for the vacant women's NXT Championship yes. between Ember Moon, Peyton Royce, Kairi Sane, and Nikki Cross. I was very pleased for Ember Moon to win it. I wasn't surprised that Ember Moon won it because yeah. she had a great sort of run with Asuka and, mm-hmm. and has been awesome. I think the finish in particular and her doing the eclipse to two people at the same time was badass.
I thought it was amazing because there was a few really nice double moves in this match, but that one I just got really excited after it happened because it's a double move that is affected by having two people because there's another head there
yeah.
to hit into and Nikki Cross, who she pinned, was the one that was on the shoulder therefore it is more damaging. Yeah. She's hitting the shoulder and having a head hitting her, so it's a double effect of the move.
She did a really good job of wrapping her arm around both their heads.
Yes, yeah.
Like, that can't... I don't think that move can't be easy
on the move,
general, because of how much motion she has on the way into it. And to have spotted both of them and being like, yeah, I can wrap my arm around both their heads.
Yeah.
Because she could easily just caught one.
Yeah, yeah.
And she didn't. She did catch both of them. Mm. It was legitimately on both people.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
There's loads of little nice things in this. I think the fact that Kairi Sane wasn't involved in that finish keeps Kairi fairly strong, so you could do Kairi and Ember going forward.
She wasn't involved in a lot of those double team, so not double team, double person moves either. Like it was almost always Peyton Royce and Nikki taking something, or a combination of those two.
She did her elbow drop on two, didn't she? Which was great again. But yeah.
But yeah, they kept her strong. Yeah. Very well.
Also, as well, she's still adapting to, like, Asuka took a while to adapt to life in America. And also, Kairi's a fair amount younger than Asuka. Asuka was well into her 30s by the time she moved to the States. So
small lady too, isn't she? She's very
tiny. She's tiny.
Fun fact, I have made an improvised telescope for Kairi Sane.
Yes, you have, John.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a fun fact.
That is.
Piece of paper made black with gaffer tape.
Amazing.
Rolled up and then...
Yep. Took him 4 hours.
It was fucking good, though.
My fun Kairi Sane fact is we were at an NXT show in, I want to say, Coco. So NXT do touring house shows all around America. Mm-hmm. But they also do smaller ones 2 or 3 times a week in Florida within 2 hours driving distance of the performance center. And they only get 200-300 people on it. And often some of the bigger stars, so the champions, don't tend to be on the shows.
Yeah.
And it's just so people get a bit of experience, because, you know, there's one thing being at the performance center, but it's wrestling in front of an actual audience. And we were at this show in Coco, and Kairi Sane was there. And I got introduced to Kairi Sane by Sho Funaki, which is cool enough in itself. But Kairi's English isn't brilliant, but Funaki's English is amazing. Like, absolutely. Like, his whole number one announcer on SmackDown thing, that's just a gimmick. Like, he talks perfect English. And he introduced me and then went away again. And then he came back again, and Funaki's a really nice guy. And he came back again and went, excuse me, Kairi wants to know, what are your tattoos? And I went, oh, they're all girls from video games, pointing my sleeve. And she thought that was hilarious. So I was like, brilliant. I've bonded with Funaki and Kairi Sane over having Princess Peach tattooed on my forearm.
Brilliant.
So I mean, it was a good match. Like, I always expected it to be good because all four people in it are good. What was interesting with Peyton Royce's entrance was she came out and Billy Kay sort of went, bye, see ya. And it was her sell of, where are you going?
Yeah,
which actually made it interesting. But my wrestler fan brain went, well, she's coming back out to interfere. And then she didn't.
Oh, is that what you thought?
I thought that, yeah. I was like, normally, when someone says goodbye on their entrance, they nearly always interfere.
Mm.
I didn't think that.
Yeah.
So, I thought at the time, either Peyton's winning this, and they're kind of very subtly splitting the tag team up.
Yeah.
Or it's a complete piece of misdirection to make me think that Peyton is winning this. So either way, it worked.
Yeah.
Honestly, who did we all think? Because I was certain Ember Moon was winning it, but who did everyone think was winning?
I thought Peyton was winning, because I thought that she was the only heel that can be there, and therefore there's a load of faces for her to feud with on a longer run. Whereas if face one, I couldn't see that many heels at that level to then compete.
Makes sense.
Same. I was pretty sure it was Ember, to be honest.
Yeah.
Just because she'd done the big run of matches with Asuka, and she never got to have the payoff moment where she went over Asuka when Asuka went on up. So I thought that this was her, and it was a nice touch the way they did the Asuka in the ring at the end. So that was her payoff.
I love that she was in the ring.
Asuka just popping up.
And Regal, and like, she put a hand on Regal's shoulder. Regal's quite a jumpy man from having to wrestle legitimate punters in Blackpool for years. She put a hand on his shoulder. You could see him turn around going, "Who's it? Oh, it's Asuka, it's fine."
That's funny.
Next, we had the NXT title match, and something that I did not expect, which is a new NXT champion.
That surely surprised everyone. There can't be anyone in the room who saw that coming.
Well, I didn't see it coming. I was really pleased about it because regular Tuesday Night Jaw listeners will be aware I've been banging on about how good Almas is for ages and how he's the second coming of Eddie Guerrero, and this is further proof of how absolutely brilliant he is. And again, coming back to how often we've watched him this year, he is so good. So good. Even on house shows, goes does everything at 100% all the time. If anyone's ever seen the stuff he did in Mexico when he was La Sombra, the fact that he's responsible pretty much for the whole Los Ingobernables gimmick, it's someone like Naito does quite a lot of La Sombra's moveset, so he's ludicrously good. And I really like what they were doing, what they've done by putting him with Zelina Vega, because Almas isn't you ever had a conversation with him? His English isn't amazing.
Brief conversations. Yeah,
He's a nice guy, and his English isn't the best. He can speak English, but it's not as
promo level.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, that's the thing. And whereas Vega is an amazing talker, and her whole gimmick of I've seen him, and there's an opportunity, and I'm like an agent rather than a manager. Like, you know what I mean? Like when you see someone going, I represent this person. Yeah. Almost like a female version of Don King.
That's what she's like. I can make money off this person.
And she's the reason I was expecting him to win, or I thought it was a viable option, because I haven't been on board at all, despite all your praise of his pass of Almas. And literally within a week or two of her running involved. Things, I was like, he's great. Such this is fantastic. And that's what made me think, right, it felt like, as you were saying, they brought him in and wanted to push him quite quickly and it didn't connect. And then when that connected so quickly, I was like, right, this could be, yeah.
I just think, so I'm a huge Eddie Guerrero fan. And the thing that really, there was association with other people that always pushed Eddie Guerrero to better things. And it wasn't necessarily having a manager, but in Mexico, it was being associated with Art Barr and Jake Roberts for a while that made him an absolute mega heel. And it was being associated with people like Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit that took him to the next sort of level. And I really, really see that in him. And also, like, he's got all the tools. He's really good at wrestling. He's a good-looking dude. He's in good shape. Everything that... And now he's got... The promo side was the only bit that he didn't have. And he's got someone who's really, really good at them.
Yeah.
And she's both really likable, because you watch her and go, well, she's got a point. She can make money out of these people. Yeah. But at the same time, if you need him to be super heel, she can be... Like the fact that she was doing Hurricane Rana in this match, the first one when she goes to Rana him and Rana drew and he catches her.
Or the one she did on NXT the other week into the steps was perfection. Roddy, that was amazing. Like that was genuinely something that made me kind of sit up in my seat, because it was so nailed. Rana,
Lita used to really throw a bloody.
And she's a tiny girl as well. Again, they highlighted that with Drew standing in front of her at the beginning of this. But yeah,
she is absolutely minuscule. But also, I think I read in an interview with someone recently about how WWE had repeatedly tried to find something for her as a wrestler.
Yeah, so
and they couldn't really find something for her, and her size was a bit of a problem and stuff like that. And then this opportunity's come up, and it's a great example of two people going right. Is the opportunity? Let's nail this. And both of them are playing their parts so well. I mean, I feel sad because I like Drew, so I feel a bit sad for Drew. And the I was reading on the internet this morning that I think Drew might have tore his bicep in the match as well. Yeah. Which
was that literally on the last move?
I don't know.
He just held it straight after.
I think it was a little bit earlier.
It sucks for Drew.
But I do wonder whether Almas was meant to go over.
No, I think he was.
You think?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, think he was.
I personally, I'm not convinced. I think that finish was called in the ring because Drew knew he'd be out for months.
You don't know that. I don't think they ever call matches like that in the ring when it's the titles at stake, because you don't know how long you're going
to
be out.
Sure, but this is what it looks like to me as a promoter.
Yeah,
because that finish was literally came out of nowhere.
It was great though, wasn't it? The kneeling run was just, it looked brutal and wonderful.
This is a talking point rather than me saying that it definitely is the case, but like, should they have gone home on the interference into the DDT, which got the best false reaction because everyone bit that was the actual finish, and then they do the sick kick out, and then that that Avalanche one afterwards, both from kind of nowhere. Like the crotching himself wasn't like the most creative thing in comparison to how good the Spike Rana into a take in the regular finish was.
I think that's because NXT is chiefly a more indie-ish crowd. I think that's playing up the conventions of indie wrestling by having people kick out stuff.
It's one of those ones where you have a spot which you know this is going to get the best false finish reaction.
Yeah.
But the trouble is then coming up with something better to be the actual finish.
Yeah.
And I don't think they managed it with this one as an example. Like, I don't think that finish was hotter than the false finish that they did with the Rana. But then his regular DDT.
Not to get sort of too deep into it, but maybe that was the point. Like, I'm here saying that I think they called it in the ring. So for that finish to seem like it came out of absolutely nowhere, maybe that was entirely the point to work.
Don't get me wrong, that DDT at the end looked nasty. Like,
it
looked like it put you down, but
it was horrible. And he clutched his arm straight after, as soon as Almas got off him.
I was worried he pulled it on the, because he is like supporting himself on the rope.
I think that's because
when
he
did
punched.
The DDT, and then I was worried that like he'd pulled it as he went down with the DDT, because it was obvious he'd hurt his arm, right? Because he didn't away holding his arm.
Until I read that about him potentially hurting his arm, and again, we don't know how long he's going to potentially be out for. I thought, oh, they've just used him in NXT for a bit, but because Drew's got so much experience, he's probably just going straight to the main roster now. That's the how I looked at it, was because he's got all the tools that you need, and he's arguably,
because he's massive,
but also he's arguably a better fit for the main roster than he is for NXT.
Definitely.
And not that he's not, again watching him work this year, like he's thrown absolutely everything into this, and in the same way that you have to appreciate what he's done and what someone like Jinder Mahal's done to go, do you know what, I had this taken away from me and I'm not letting it slip again. So hopefully he's not out for long.
The reports that I've read over the weekend, so 4 to 6 months.
Oh, sucks. Wow. He's a nice guy as well, Drew, so get well soon, Drew.
But if he gets back, like, 4 to 6 months immediately, I'm thinking, night after WrestleMania, shows up on Raw, huge reaction.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, doesn't hurt, like, in the grand scheme of things, 6 months off doesn't hurt him at all.
Hmm.
If he shows up on main roster right at the end of it.
Who do we think the next challenger to Almas's title will be?
I think Alistair was Alistair, sorry.
Alistair?
Alistair. I think Alistair was a good call earlier because they've got that bit of history, and he's come off that winning, again, arguably the match of the weekend, if not more.
Oh, yeah. My slight reservation about that would be that as a booker, at this point, I would be keeping Alistair undefeated.
Yeah.
So if they want to keep Almas a champion for a while, you don't put him in with Black.
Yeah.
But there's not.
Well, Adam Cole would be. Because I think Almas has come out of that having turned the crowd reaction suggested that they like him more than maybe the booking suggests.
But surely he'll still, with Vega, he'll still be.
You can't be a babyface.
I mean, he'll get cheered on the big takeover shows, I'm sure, but they'll still portray him as a villainous, underhanded character.
Yeah.
So maybe Cole doesn't work in that sense, because Cole's Roddy can go straight again, but Roddy's had a long run.
And that's
Roddy would have been one of my suggestions, because he's a sympathetic enough character, and if you want to not take the title off of him straight, because takeovers are every 3 months, so you know. If you're building someone at the next takeover, do you want to establish this as Almas' champion going to WrestleMania season, or do you want to switch it again?
Oh, you do Gargano, don't you?
Yeah. Again, because
they had that match they screwed Gargano over.
Oh, and that was the one in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
They could do Gargano.
And then maybe by that point, Ciampa might be fit by that point.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's good, because I'd say with Adam Cole, it's that thing. Conor McGregor's a great example of him kind of saying, I'm bigger than the belt, I'm bigger than a belt now, I'm a bigger story, I'm a bigger match. The Conor match is bigger than a title shot.
Yeah.
And I think the Undisputed Era and Sanity type feud doesn't need a title at the moment. It is that kind of that Cena rivalry, when Cena didn't have a belt for ages, because you don't need him to. His feud is bigger than the belt in many ways, and I think that's kind of the case with the Undisputed Era and Sanity thing right now, that that's the biggest storyline, and they don't need to tie up a single belt in it. They can let, you know, all the belts bring other people up and tell these stories.
They haven't really done a three-way or a four-way run with the belt at NXT for a long time, right?
No.
So they could easily do, like, Gargano and Alistair, or Gargano and Strong, or Gargano, Strong and Cole as a four-way thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where Almas ends up retaining because
Cole
and Roddy are obsessed with one another.
Yeah, I like
you
that.
Know, and then you go into programs towards WrestleMania, which are all singles stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah, I do think that
that would be really good, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
aesthetically, look at that. Cole, Roddy, Gargano, and Almas would be pretty good, wouldn't it?
Be
a good four way,
very good. Then to War Games, where barely anything happened. So I was tweeting. Well, I nearly got the main event last night when I was watching Takeover. I was tweeting. This show has been the most fun, and people going, you wait till you get to the main event. Now, I had a few people going, yeah, but there's no roof on the cage, and it's not, strictly speaking, War Games. Yeah, but, you know, I know why there's no roof. Well, I have a guess at why there's no roof on the cage now. So one of the first War
tax
Games...
tax reasons?
No, because it's health and safety reasons. One of the first War Games, the finish of the match was a genuine, like, they had to go to the finish because Sid powerbombed Brian Pillman, but he lifted him up, hit his head on the ceiling of the cage, and absolutely fucked him up, and they had to go to the finish. So and wrestling's safer than it was back then. War Games was properly brutal back in the day. Everyone bled. War Games is very different now. Obviously, there's a no blood policy in WWE. I mean, there was blood in this match.
There was a lot of blood in this match.
But it was accidental blood, which tells you how dangerous it is. Imagine how much more dangerous it would have been if there was a roof on the cage
and
as well.
And they've got a team who are, a team I think are great, but are young in the Authors of Pain, who are all about lifting people over their heads quite a lot.
Yeah.
So in that situation, it's like there's a lot more risk of that that happening.
Wrestling's changed as well. Like, you want people to be able to do stuff like the big suplex spot from the top.
Yeah.
You kind of need that to happen.
Yeah.
How it used to be with a roof on, there was nothing massively spectacular happened in those matches.
Yeah.
They were brutal and they were intense and they were full of heat.
Yeah.
But there was no big spots.
Huge high spot.
Whereas this is essentially a series of fantastically well planned spots that all made loads of sense. And every time one happened, I'd be like, "Oh, it's good, isn't it?"
And
like, it's just really good.
The big takeaway I had was how far moves wise and ability wise a wrestling has come, because it felt like that. It felt like I've loved the other War Games matches, but as you said, there weren't really. It was more, this is this great spectacle and there's attention moves wise and technical. This was a next level to any of the previous ones for me. It blew me away move for move.
I have a slight confession in that I haven't seen any other War Games matches.
But you didn't really like wrestling until the mid noughties, was that
correct? Yeah.
So you don't, like, when we do meetings, I'm the one with the stupidly encyclopedic knowledge of wrestling, because I'm a nerd and I've been watching it. I'm also older than everyone else, so I've been watching it for a long time. And I remember I didn't watch a War Games match live ever because it was WCW, which was harder to see.
Certainly, pay-per-views on WCW were very difficult to hold up.
So it was only when I got into getting tapes and stuff when I was a student that I actually went back and watched them and was like, oh, just the crowd reaction to stuff. You know, and they used to do the coin toss to decide who went, because the old War Games rules were it was two teams, four or five. And two men would start, and then there'd be a coin toss. So this War Games is not the
name. I was confused by what you said. You said two teams, four or five.
Two teams of four or five.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a coin toss to decide which team got the advantage.
The
heels always had the advantage.
Yeah, of course they did.
Always.
Yeah.
Weighted coin.
Whereas I actually like how this was put together.
Yeah, I really liked it.
And I have a few people tweet me saying, yeah, but it would have been better if people entered one at a time. Yeah, but then
the match would have
lasted for years.
Yeah, it would have been long.
And the advantage wouldn't have been that great in kind of the modern kind of the way it is. It wouldn't have felt as overwhelming that when there's three of them and everyone has only got one, it's a huge thing.
People forget as well, audiences now have got a much shorter attention span.
Yeah.
You kind of need it to be that a team of two come in and help and make it so there's loads of big spots so people don't lose their attention. It
was just perfect too, wasn't it? Because the way they structured it, you had Roddy, Cole and Eric Young basically just do a good triple threat match for 5 minutes. Then you had Undisputed Era come out and basically take a heat for 5 minutes. And then you had Authors of Pain come out and just do stunts for 5 minutes. And then when Sanity come in, they bring all of the weapons in and it goes mental.
Yeah,
and that was like, that's perfect. Like, constructed that
perfectly
way.
Constructed,
it let Undisputed Era put actual heat on. It let Authors of Pain do a bunch of stunts.
Throwing contest because of the two rings was just fantastic.
Let Sanity look crazy because all of a sudden they come out and they're like, you don't want to introduce the weapons too early, but like, you really want Sanity to introduce the weapons. So them coming in last together and just.
And it just
lobbing
added
weapons into the ring.
It added that great, wonderful. It allowed you to have the suspension of disbelief when Killian Dane didn't get any tables, and then the crowd demand tables, and he goes and gets tables. That allowed you to go, anything can happen.
It was just fantastic that moment of him because I don't know if he guessed that they'd maybe do that. We want tables given.
I think he's smart enough.
Because the way he sold it, oh, well.
All right, if you want.
While I'm here.
I'll do it. I'll just go and get him.
I loved that. I thought that was brilliant on his part. If that was intentional, of just acting like that's all I'm getting and then going in. I didn't understand him putting a chain on the gate.
Because he's crazy.
He wants to. And they ate the key, didn't he?
It's locked. Yeah, that's what I thought. It's like, well, but if you leave, your team is out anyway. It seemed completely bizarre. It was a shocking thing. I was like, all right, cool, he's going to he's eating the key now. That was lovely. I don't know why that happened, but I liked it when they went to leave at the end and they were like, no, that guy's eating the key.
We've got to wait for him to listen. We've got to wait for him to poop it out.
That's a strange
you ruined the trash can. There's no way for him to do it.
I like that they messed around with the traditional convention of leaving a cage. So obviously if you left the cage for this, it meant that your team forfeited. Only one person tried to leave the cage and it was Adam Cole, who has previously looked at his partners and gone, do you know what, I'm off. Like he's to get across the fact that he's a weasel. The fact that he repeatedly tried to escape the cage to avoid the carnage and didn't give a shit about dropping his own team in it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, really, really cool.
That camera shot of the twin Towers of Doom.
Yeah.
Where he's just left in the middle, just going,
Because he does look like the Messiah as well.
Yeah.
So that's terrific.
So
many cool spots, so it was always going to be hard to choose an organic one to go home with, right? So many amazing high spots. You think like, what are they going to finish with here?
But also, I don't mind matches finishing with a simpler move, because what you don't want is you don't want to get to a point like the problem they have in Japan, where you have to kill a man to pin it. So if logically, if you've taken loads of big spots and you've kicked out of them, there's going to be a point where if you're playing Street Fighter 2, right, and you're dragon punching people repeatedly, eventually, if they've got a tiny sliver of energy and you hit them with a light kick, you still win. So I think that logic of someone's worn down enough for your finisher, your regular finisher to work, rather than needing to do a ridiculous shit drop avalanche version of the finisher all the time, I think conditions fans to know that anyone can win at any time. So I'm kind of on board and down
completely
with that.
And what a beautiful detail, I thought, on the speaking of killing a person, is when they did the finish, when they went to the wide shot, no one was moving. Everyone laid absolutely still. There was no rolling around or trying to get up. It was just everyone was gone. That was it. No one was moving. And we literally were looking over at a few of the Sanity guys like, they look dead. Like they're that
every
still.
Every chance Alexander Wolf is dead.
Well, that was the one that we looked at. Him in the background just slumped at a really awkward angle. It was like, someone definitely check on this dude. But again, I thought that was a beautiful touch. There wasn't the kind of like holding a joint or whatever else, or rolling around or staggering to your feet. It was just, no, even the guys who've won, only the guys who've won, in fact, are the ones who are kind of slightly moving. And everyone else is just still, which I thought looked great.
It did. I quite liked how it felt like a cross. I've written this in my notes. It felt like a cross between a match from 1989 and a match from now.
Yeah.
So a cross between the stuff that we love about NXT and indie wrestling and whatever, and an old school War Games match. In that there was bits where the crowd reacted exactly like it was 1989. So some of the stuff that Authors of Pain did, just like throwing someone from one ring to another, which isn't like it's not the most ridiculous spot in the world, but people were going, oh, the reaction was, fuck, they're strong lads, aren't they? Like, which you don't hear very often.
The beauty of it is it's a spot that you can never see,
because
there's never two rings. That's, and that's what was great. It was the simplicity of, we're throwing people, but we never get to see that. So it's like, this is amazing.
That was one of the things. I totally get why they do it, why they did it for the spectacle of War Games. But it was a bit sad on the rest of the card, was that they never acknowledged the second ring.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like
yeah.
on the old World strange, War Three WCW shows, used to enjoy the fact that like Mysterio would wrestle someone and he'd like springboard from one rope onto the other rope's ring onto someone and stuff. They would allow themselves to use both rings in the other matches too.
Completely. I wanted after Alistair won him to do his flip over the ropes into a cross leg into the other ring.
They
could have had a spotlight or whatever else is his kind of obviously there was far better the moment they had, but I was like, that's perfect there to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Almas certainly is athletic enough that he could have done something incredible ring to ring.
Yeah.
Like I know why they didn't, because obviously saved that spectacle for the last match. The last match already got a giant old cage.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting how the non War Games matches, they did two in one ring and two in the other.
Yeah.
People who bought tickets,
right?
Innit? Like, if you bought a ticket to the front row and you're sat on the front
and
row,
then they make it
up. You're like, what?
Yep.
Stitched.
What was everyone's favourite spot in this match? Just out of interest, mine was the arm breaker elbow drop spot.
Yeah.
Which was just, it was like, where's he fucking at? Where's he come from?
Yeah.
Which that was my favourite spot in the match. I also love the fact that they made Killian Dane look like a megastar.
Yeah, huge.
Did look
which
amazing.
Again, friend of the show. So, you know, nice one, mate.
And made a little point of reminding everyone that he was in the Andre the Giant battle role and smashed it and looked amazing. I thought that was nice, because that was something I'd kind of forgotten, because he had that and then they didn't do anything with it.
Because we were at WrestleMania and we when the Andre the Giant battle role happened and he came out, we both went,
mate.
He's one of our mates, he's in this in the same way that when Jack Gallagher was in the Royal Rumble, it was like, oh, this, but my lives are surreal now. This is bizarre.
What was good about it is like Akam and Razor come as like a package, right?
Yeah.
So you never really consider those as separate entities, and they're big stars within NXT. Roddy, obviously big star. Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish come together. Adam Cole, big star. Eric Young, big star. The two guys who are like probably lesser stars going into it were the guys who probably shone arguably the most.
Yeah.
Wolf and Killian Dane.
And in recent weeks as well, like Wolf has become
like
Wolf's brilliant.
Superstars in it.
So good.
Yeah.
He felt originally in Sanity as the tagged on extra guy. And then this 100%. Last, in this feud, in the build to this, he's found his character so well and been, he's, I don't know, it feels like he's got an individual character now. Rather than just he's a member of Sanity, he's got his crazy shouting and pulling faces.
If you ever go and see an NXT show live, and you're watching a Sanity match, just watch Alexander Wolf. Watch all the stuff he does when he's not in shot or not wrestling. He never stops being in character ever, and he's absolutely amazing for it. And my appreciation for him this year has gone through the roof.
I think he had at the beginning, didn't he? He had the cool smash dancing that he used to do, and that looked really cool, especially if you like listen to hardcore music or whatever. It looks, you know, that like that just looks really visually cool.
Yeah.
And then and now he started doing like a lot of his offense. Like he did this crazy reckless flip dive that just looked wild, where like one arm was down and one arm was up. And like I'm sure he can probably do it clean, like a nice tidy starfish. But he just wings himself over the rope. Like that's he came across like a megastar. Yeah. Him and Killian, and good for Killian too.
Yeah,
because they let him do. He can obviously. Like the British independent people from British independent wrestling will know that he can do a lot of pretty incredible things for a gentleman of his size, and he doesn't always get the opportunity to show people that he can do that.
Yeah,
and he definitely got an opportunity on Saturday night.
Yeah,
it's like he did coast to coast and lots of huge things.
Yeah. taunting Adam Cole, who was there, sort of up and left of him just before he did the coast to coast.
Yeah,
was wonderful.
Super cool.
Last question before.
Is anyone else got their spot of the match?
Oh, I don't have a specific.
I've
spot.
Got one, but I wanted to let everyone else go first.
My favorite.
I keep going. I'll go first.
My favorite moment of the match was that dueling Terror of Doom spot where the focus was on Cole the whole time, because I thought that told a wonderful story just in that one camera shot.
Yeah.
The biggest bump is probably that top rope German. That's scary for both guys, especially considering their weight.
And the fact that one of the biggest moments was just before that was just Adam Cole climbing to the top and going Adam Cole, but and getting the whole crowd to do it. It's what a great simple spot that just got everyone nuts.
Just say my name.
The fact that Cole, when he made his entrance, because obviously he was in first out of the Undisputed team, just walked straight past Eric Young and into the other ring.
Yeah.
Was, again, getting him over as a weasel.
Yeah.
As cocky, but doesn't really want to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My previous favourite War Games moment. So if anyone hasn't watched any of the War Games, if you go and watch the Four Horsemen one, was when Flair comes out and honestly spends a minute strutting, goes into the other ring, struts before doing anything, just strutting about, and I was like, it's just great, and I love those little bits. And in this match it was a similar little bit, that it was when Kyle O'Reilly, who loves Ryle O'Kylie, just did
good reference.
He went for a chair shot and missed and hit the chair on the ropes and bounced back his face. And he did it so perfectly, because he did it again. That's a spot that can look a bit silly or look a bit false, but it just looked great. It was just really good, and they moved out of the way just in time, and he just hit the ropes and hit himself in the face.
There's a look on his face as the chair's coming back towards him. It's going off.
Of complete shock, yeah. I thought that was just a lovely little bit that I just thought was nailed and wasn't over the top or blown up to huge proportions because of the thing. It was just a really nice
just
little
a small thing that was done really well.
Completely.
That was
mine. Yeah, that was it. Which feels disrespectful to all the amazing spots that were at great risk to everyone's personal health. But I just loved that as a little moment in there.
So I've got a couple of questions before we move on to Survivor Series. First off, we got asked by Josh, what three-man teams would we pick for War Games? And I think you kind of need to have a theme to each team for it to work. So, and anyone alive or dead, wrestling anywhere, three-man teams to wrestle.
Naito, Evil, and Bushi.
Right.
That's my...
You've got to do three-man teams.
We've got to come up with 12 between us.
Nine, mate.
There's four of us here.
No. Three, each of us, three-man teams. You've got to come up with nine. So you're
so we're coming up with 36.
You're three. God. We can choose people that have been chosen before. I'm not going to make it that difficult. So if you're putting together a War Games match, because obviously you've got to have three teams that have chemistry with each other rather than just three wrestlers that you like.
See, now you introduce the rules.
Yeah,
the
that's not really a rule.
I'm going to go a British strong star, the Elite, and a Legion of Doom when they added Ahmed Johnson.
Wowza.
What a great battle. What a great three teams, eh?
British strong star is a great show.
Yeah. Ahmed Johnson, eh?
British strong star, Kings of the North, all three of them. This is the British version, and
CCK,
yeah,
that's the obvious three.
That's the British War Games.
Yep,
well done.
Cheers, Wembley.
I did an interview the other day where the interviewer said to me, "If you could book," the actual question was, "If you could book anyone in the world to appear for you at Wembley, who would you choose?" And I named AJ Styles and Kazuchika Okada, and he's quoted that like that's going to be the main event at Wembley.
Mate,
it's not going to be the main event at Wembley, guys.
Budget permitted,
as we discussed earlier,
permitted.
It's going to be a Ford Fiesta against
contracts permitted.
It's going to be a Ford Fiesta against
Jimmy Havoc.
Three teams.
Boy, oh boy. Tough this, isn't it?
I would have Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard.
Yep, lovely.
I would have Terry Funk, Mick Foley, Atsushi Anita, the other, the second team. It's a War Games match. It needs to be violent, doesn't it?
Good point. good point, well made.
And I would have Eddie Guerrero, Art Barr, and Jake Roberts as the original Los Gringos Locos as the other team.
Wowza.
I'm rereading a lot of early 90s Wrestling Observers at the minute, so that'll be my teams.
I can't even think of them, really. What? I like the idea of actual three-men teams, not like two men and a little baby. Like, I want it to be...
I love that film.
Good movie. Good movie.
Money Inc. With Virgil.
Money Inc. There you go. Money Inc. With Virgil. Love that one. Demolition again. Because, you know, they're just a good, solid three-man team. What other three-man teams are there? Stables are great, don't they? But I don't want a four-man stable where it's like, you know, DX, but we'll just have the New Age Outlaws and X-Pac and sorry, Triple H and Shawn Michaels and all the X number of people who get to be involved. So I don't really want to do that.
I'm trying to think who else is a trio. New Day?
The Shield are a good trio, right?
The Wyatts. If it was of recent, the Wyatts, the Shield.
Wyatts and the Shield, and someone who would actually
Demolition
stick in with
Money and Convergence.
I know they were in it, but Sanity are perfect for a War Games match. Yeah, they're built for it. They're that kind of team that are meant to have mental matches, and they're bloody great.
Wowza! Sanity, the Wyatts, and the Shield would be crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Whoosh! Well, then we'll go for that.
Good answers. John's just briefly left the room. I'm going to ask this question to you because it's something I mentioned last night. Mm-hmm. I think Eric Young has the best voice in all of wrestling.
Yep.
Like, I could listen to Eric Young talk for days and days. And he's a man who sounds like he smokes 9,000 cigarettes a day.
I think that they added Shawn Michaels on the pre-show to make you remember how great his voice is.
Oh, Shawn Michaels' voice is wonderful as well.
He was one, because as soon as he was talking, my mate Stu said, who's got a better voice, Eric Young? Or whose voice would you prefer, Eric Young or Shawn Michaels? I said, depends what they're doing. Depends what they're telling me.
I think I offered to book, in New Orleans, I offered to book Eric Young versus Loki in some kind of speech-off.
Oh, Loki's got a good voice.
Yeah, because a lot of people
Loki went into, like, did voiceover work for a little while in between wrestling gigs and stuff, because he's got this, like, he's also so
got,
deep,
isn't
it?
One of my favourite real names in wrestling, which is Brandon Silvestri, which is a brilliant name.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
What a name. But your voice is excellent.
Very Welsh, it is.
But, you know, I am biased as a Welsh. So, you know, like, I was tweeting about it, and people were going, yeah, but what about this? And I'm like, no. Eric Young's voice. There was a little snippet of him doing a promo at the very beginning of TakeOver, where you were reminded how good his voice is. And I sat and had a conversation with him once where all the time I was thinking, he was talking about ice hockey, which he loves, and all the time I was thinking, like, first of all, I'm talking to Eric Young, this is really cool. Yeah. And secondly, I was thinking, your voice is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
I thought of one.
Yeah.
Macho Man.
Because
again, you always hear people say that you think that was an act, and then they talk to him backstage, and that's just how he talked. That's
Macho
how he
Man's
was.
Got quite an iconic.
Macho Man's
voice,
a hell of a voice, isn't it?
Yeah. A sign of a good voice, maybe in wrestling, for usability, is like Eric Young has managed to, sometimes been forced, and maybe sometimes out of his own choice, has managed to reinvent himself a number of times, and whenever he reinvents himself, his voice still suits the character.
Yeah.
So he can be maniacal and his voice suits a maniacal character. He can be comedic and his voice still suits that character. He can be an underdog babyface and his voice still suits that character. That's quite a lot of diversity to your voice to be able to...
For such a distinctive voice as well. Yeah.
No, good point. Right, on to Survivor Series. How long we got left? Oh god! It's like every time we do this, and there's a takeover. The takeover takes up all the time.
You've got 6 minutes to summarize Survivor Series.
We've got more than 6 minutes.
Linking from that to this, one of the people I think who's just got such authority in their voice in quite a quick time since they've come over is Elias.
Yeah,
I think the way he addresses everyone at the start, it's so good, and the Who Wants to Walk with Elias just sounds
also
wonderful, and I think he's really got a good...
Has the best sad face in the entire world.
Yeah,
like, just looks so sad
all the
time. And also the
best little adorable smirk when he says, "Who wants to walk with Elias?" And now people cheer.
Yeah,
and he's got that little, yeah,
the Rory.
I've won you over somehow. I don't know.
The Rory Manchester way he wrestled Jason Jordan.
Yeah,
like when he came out and he went, "Shall I sing Wonderwall?" And people are like, "Yeah!" And he's like, "I'm not going to do that. Great. I've got a better song I've written myself."
I was so not on board with him at all for such a long time, and then. And when he got called up, I was like, why have you... I thought it was more likely he'd be released than called up. And he has just excelled.
Great.
He's wonderful.
So here's the thing. It's almost like a little bit like the point we were making about Drew before. Some people... the NXT crowd is very, very different. Just you can smash it on NXT. It doesn't mean you're going to smash it when you get called up to Raw or SmackDown. Yeah. Because it's an entertainment product aimed at people who are flipping channels. Mm-hmm. It's not... Yeah, it's still aimed at us, but we're wrestling fans. We're going to watch it because we're wrestling fans. We're not going to not watch it. The people that you need to hook in are people who aren't necessarily wrestling fans, and he's ideal for an entertainment product over a very much wrestling-based product, I think.
Yeah,
And he's good in the ring as well.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong
with
him.
He's got a great build. He's
great
built
physique,
well. He's got he's
so
fantastic.
Wide.
Yeah.
Looks like a monster.
Yeah. Going into Survivor Series, there was a lot of changes, which actually made me... more excited about... I love Survivor Series. Survivor Series was always my second... when I was a kid, was my second favourite pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
My favourite was Royal Rumble.
Rumble, yeah.
The second was Survivor Series because you had all the Survivor Series
cool
matches, which we don't have as much anymore. I've said this before, I'm not a massive fan of the whole Raw versus SmackDown dynamic because everyone knows it's still the same company. You all work for the same company. I don't... It's like being at a football team. It's like... if you play for a football team and you having a rivalry with the under 23 squad or something like that, like you're all still employed by the same people. To me, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But
they pulled it off. They did the Under Siege thing fantastically.
The Under Siege thing made that much more interesting than it's been in previous
years. As fantastically as they did it, they also, my gosh, don't they just know it? Because they just replayed that so much. I love the Under Siege thing. And by the actual event, I was like, I can't wait to not see the Under Siege thing again because they did it so well, but they really knew how well they did it. It was just constant. Yeah. Here's a highlight.
And so there was various changes going into it. Women's title switched hands on SmackDown from Natalya to Charlotte Flair. AJ Styles beat Jinder Mahal at a show we happened to be at in Manchester, which was, again, I did not see that coming. I was like, oh, there's been loads of twists and turns in WWE over the last month that I've gone, even me, jaded, cynical, 30 years of being a wrestling fan, went, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
And it meant that going into it, I was more excited about it than I've been for a WWE pay-per-view. And I always love watching wrestling. And I'm never going to stop loving it. But I was way more excited about this as a pay-per-view than I've been for one in a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, as an example, the Jinder switch, nothing against Jinder at all. But the Jinder switch made that match infinitely more exciting to the majority of people, didn't it?
Yeah.
The dynamic of AJ Styles against Brock Lesnar is far more fascinating.
So I read
the dynamic of Jinder.
I read on the internet people going, yeah, but they've done it to sell tickets. But Survivor Series was sold out. Survivor Series always sells out.
Mm.
It was long since sold out, so they didn't do it to sell tickets, and they're not doing it to sell pay-per-views anymore because you have the network. Like they don't, you don't need to hotshot stuff to sell pay-per-views anymore because you've got the audience already. Everyone already subscribes to the network. I think quite a lot of it was just where they looked at it and went, "How can we? This show's probably going to be good. How can we make this show excellent and have much more interest in it?" And I think that's why they made those decisions. And as a wrestling fan, I look at it and go, "Good work, everybody." You know, switching the tag titles made sense because it set up 1 6-man match and it made. Gave us a different dynamic in the tag team match that we got that was excellent.
Yeah.
So much cool stuff.
There's two things I think there. One, just quickly, because I'm the only one unassociated who can just talk as a fan, but the Under Siege backstage thing. The other backstage thing I've seen recently that just blew me away was the Ginny and Dahlia Black backstage segment. That's one that two of my different mates sent me, even though I would have obviously seen it anyway, because it was just... it was amazingly real, and it had the same vibe as the way Under Siege had, where they did it so well, it didn't feel any, they're pretending, it was just brutal, and yeah.
And there happens
I loved
to be
that.
A camera there, rather
yeah.
than...
Yeah, you know, completely, and that was, the two girls just smashed that, because that looked horrific, it was amazing, but the other thing that came to mind was, with the Jinder change, it felt similar to the releasing of Ellsworth recently, where my reaction to both of them was like, I'm not that that mad about that those switch, but also the initial thing was like, how fucking great have they done? Like, Jinder, when even on here, there was all, it's probably a transitional thing, and he's done fucking brilliantly in that role and to elevate everything. And same with Ellsworth, who was that release, and it's like, that's cool, he might come back at some point, but everyone's reaction I saw online, no one was like, oh, or aggressive or mean in any way. They're all like, wow, look at that. He was brought into job to Strowman, and he's turned that into a 6-month working pay-per-views and doing all these, you know, doing big things. It's like,
so he's, I mean, dude's probably paid his mortgage off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%.
And good on him.
He's just made for life now, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? Because
he's had merch that's gone crazy as well.
Yeah. Also, met him about 6-7 months ago. He's a really nice bloke. Yeah. Like, and constantly knew he was in a position of, I can't believe this has happened. Wasn't sitting there going, yeah, I'm a big star now. He was like, well, this could end any day. Do you know what? I'm going to enjoy it. And that made me, when he got released, I was like, I'm sad for him. But at the same time, you know, good for him. He lived his dream for a year.
It's also
fantastic.
Through social media, it's given me one of my favourite, in my mind, fantasy odd couple reality series of just seeing him and Shinsuke constantly going surfing together and going, they seem to be really good mates, and Shinsuke will always post pictures of him and Ellsworth going down the beach and stuff like that. It's like, what a wonderfully strange pairing.
Hang on, is that based in reality?
That's happened. Yeah, that's happened like, on social media. There's been a few times. Oh, they obviously both surf, and when they get an opportunity, they go surfing together. It's wonderful. Imagine how Ellsworth feels. He's like, I'm on WWE and I'm surfing with Shinsuke Nakamura on my day off.
Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah.
Shinsuke. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
See?
Good work.
What a team.
So we have 3 matches on the pre-show, which we'll cover really quickly. Elias and Matt Hardy. I saw people tweeting about this going, oh, there's loads of empty seats. Yeah. It's 2 hours before the show starts.
They barely opened the doors.
So, yeah. We were at SummerSlam, and we got there maybe half an hour after the doors had opened, and we missed a match.
Yeah.
And
it was the Hardys. I was so sad.
and we got in and was like, oh, this is, you know, it's quite empty in here, but they've got to start filming. And what got me was the sort of fans who were going, oh, it's a bit empty in there, isn't it? Yeah, of course it is. The doors have only just opened. You can't criticise the fact that people aren't instantly in their seats. They're the same people, the same fans who go, but New Japan's the greatest thing in the world. The Tokyo Dome show is never full until the last 4 matches. People just rock up when they want. Some people don't watch the undercard at all in Japan.
And also the easy proof that it's worthwhile is that you're watching it to see it's a bit empty.
Yeah.
That was worth putting on there, wasn't it? If you're watching it, it's done its job. You were tuned in 2 hours early. Yeah, it's a bit empty, but they've got the network. They've got people in early. That's the point of these things. Yeah.
And in one case, we'll come to in a minute, the pre-show worked in the favour of character development of a couple of people. So we had Enzo Amore versus Kalisto for the Cruiserweight title. I said this to you the other week, I love Kalisto, and I really want to book Kalisto versus Flamita in a ludicrous luchadors who... If you watch Lucha Libre, some Lucha Libre is really slow. So if you watch it in Mexico, it's a lot more choreographed and a lot slower. Right. I remember watching Kalisto in Dragon Gate USA in 2012 and being blown away by how good he was, because he was very American in style rather than very Mexican. And the reason I love Flamita so much is he's very Japanese in style. He still does the Lucha Libre stuff, but he wrestled in Dragon Gate, which is a lot faster and a lot more hard-hitting. And I just love to put them together because I just think it would be...
Did they ever wrestle before?
I don't think they ever have. Flamita had never really wrestled on outside of Mexico or Japan until he came to wrestle for us, and then he wrestled for PWG.
Yeah.
So he'd never really done anything else. And Lucha Underground. But Kalisto had... I went to watch that Dragon Gate show a week after our first ever show, because I was in Miami for WrestleMania. And I think he got signed a couple of months after that. So we never really got a chance to see him again when he was still Samurai Del Sol.
Yeah, we tried to get him for something in the May of that year.
Yeah, and he'd gone.
Yeah, he'd done like UK Indies and he'd done everywhere, hadn't he? Yeah. That's why I thought he may have wrestled him.
Yeah. So what I really like in this match was the really subtle unsheathing of a turnbuckle cover. So the actual turnbuckle, not the corner pad, the turnbuckle cover, and Enzo pulling that off and using that to win a match. Because I don't think I've seen... you've seen people just hit themselves on the tiny little ring in the corner where the ropes are threaded through, and you think, why would that hurt? The actual turnbuckle, that'd hurt.
Yeah.
You know, so... so that I kind of...
How did he get him on to the...
They were on the apron. So they were on the apron, and he tripped him, and he headbutted the turnbuckle in the corner. And then the last match of the pre-show was Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens against Breezango. Sami Zayn's entrance as an absolute arrogant dickhead is one of the funniest things I've seen in forever.
It's fantastic.
The way he walks up the steps now into the ring. Like, he went from... obviously, there's reports they've not been around for a couple of weeks, and they come back, and I was thinking, oh, they've given them microphones. Okay, good. let's see how this goes. And they, like, Sami Zayn being a, and also Sami Zayn's characters. Kevin Owens is the quiet, I hate everybody, I want to kill everybody character. Whereas Sami Zayn's constantly going, he's the equivalent of someone in an old film going, and yeah, boss, that's what he's doing all the time. He's
just completely
going, you tell him, boss. That's Sami Zayn's character now. He's going, you tell him, Kevin. Yeah, Kevin, you tell him. And it makes you hate him.
Completely.
It's so good.
I love it. I'd completely lost interest in Sami. Again, not having the history of him on indie, so I'd only, you know, and I just think he's fantastic now. He's an absolute highlight. I mentioned to you at the last Progress on one of the Raws when he's in the ring getting a dress down and then Kevin Owens' music hits. And he's not got a mic, but just before it cuts away, you see him go, it's Kevin, just with a big smile on his face. And you see him just say that. And I was like, that was the best thing of that role. Just smile huge. You go, it's Kevin. I was like, yes, yes. Brilliant.
Also, what I love it when Kevin Owens gets a reaction to something. And then, so the famous one was when he was in, I think their match in Tokyo with him and Finn Balor. So first of all, there's all the, there's the giving the flowers, and he throws the flowers. There's all the streamers, and gets rid of the streamers. And then there's a bit where they're really cheering for something, and he just puts a chin lock on for three minutes. I properly love that side to him.
Yeah,
what brilliant. I love is he does this thing where he's got the microphone, and everyone's like, is this wise? And he gets the microphone, and he says, it's Houston, it's this arena I won my first Intercontinental title. And everyone's like, yeah. And he goes, it's this arena where I won my the Universal title. Yeah. And they all cheer. And he goes, shut up. They were my moments, not yours.
Beautifully done.
I was like,
just
bravo.
Yeah.
Good work. That's exactly what
you
should do.
He's a great, horrible guy.
So good.
The Sami and Kevin stuff is really good, isn't it? Because, like, I guess you just said that you didn't, you don't really have the background.
I knew of the history, but I didn't have the matches.
It's kind of cool when they have stuff where they've put enough, they've invested enough TV story into it that the storyline and their involvement with one another, like, they'll forever be best friends or bitter enemies, still makes sense to someone who's not, but it'll always mean more and be more significant to people who have invested 10-15 years of following them in it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it'll always completely. It'll always mean more to them, but they've invested enough story on TV in it that it still makes sense
completely.
To normal people. It's like bands and
normal people.
It's true. It's like bands and stuff do it, and television shows do it, and things where you have something which is funny and entertaining and good for just an average person watching it. The Marvel Universe is a prime example of it. Marvel Universe always tend to make a movie which is entertaining for everyone, but if you're obsessed and you follow the whole thing, then it'll be more entertaining to you.
They're beautifully done. Feud on NXT was essentially a previously on Sami and Kevin Owens to bring everyone up to date on,
here we go,
and now we can have them on the main roster.
Exactly. Forever destined to be together.
Yeah.
We try and book Progress like that a little bit, where everything makes sense just within the context of the show or in the last couple of shows.
But
like,
makes more sense.
There's loads of stuff in the back catalogue that will feed into what's happening now.
I love that.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen with everything, but.
Happens with some people. Some people happen to might be in this room.
Yeah, true.
Yep.
Peace.
I mean, the match itself was, I mean, there was part of me was like, oh, Breezango might win this because of recent, and I I enjoyed them. I like Breezango's act a lot.
I think it's great.
He's funny as fuck. And just the whole thing of, I think there's someone, it's the whole sort of Anchorman sort of Naked Gun feel of everything they do is really, really, really funny.
Again, it feels like a team have been given a not that great gimmick or opportunity, have gone, let's go 110% on this and really turn it into something great.
It feels like every line is a joke. You just have to look for it.
Every
visual gag on the notice board, everything on the shelf, everything that they're wearing, everything's a joke.
Yeah.
That's wonderful to see, isn't it, when people are given something which maybe at first you'd be like, oh, that's such a crutch. And they're like, okay, we're going to turn this into the best thing ever.
Yeah.
We're going to turn this into literally the coolest thing on the roster.
I was sad when I was at SmackDown and there wasn't a Fashion Files.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely
they
sad.
They do it great.
I know I got to see an AJ Styles title win. I got to see the first world title switch outside of North America in the history of WWE. But however, I did not get to see a Fashion Files.
They're in London. They could have done a great Fashion Files. Yeah. It's a fashion...
North America and Canada, right?
Yeah.
They did a switch in Canada.
No, that's what I mean, North America, the continent of North America. Yeah. So, onto the show, main show itself. Also, I did like the foreshadowing that Owens and Zayn might turn up later on with their promo, just about how slighted they feel about Shane McMahon.
They did put that over, that they might rock
up. Yeah.
opening match, six-man tag, New Day versus The Shield. Starting off again with good promo work, Kofi Kingston talking about his huge dangling pausing and then saying guts. And everyone going, oh, he didn't say balls. We wanted him to say balls. And just Big E going, PG though, right? PG. It's the little asides that they say.
They're
and
wonderful,
really
it,
nerdy
yeah.
references that Xavier puts in are really 100%. Cool.
Yeah.
I think a lot of those are a bit whoosh over my head. But
Also, I like the fact that New Day put over the fact that they're a unit who trust each other and have never split up in their pre-match promo. As opposed to The Shield, who, and they just kept saying, because one of you will just screw the others over at some point. And I really like that, because it helped them, because if you look at it just based on star power, you'd go, well, The Shield are going to annihilate them.
Yeah,
they don't, and that's not what happened, because they got over that whole, they're a better team than The Shield aesthetic, which I thought was really cool. And the opening sort of exchange between Roman Reigns and Big E, again, it's this thing of a very old school reaction of people going, oh, I want to see the two big lads go at it.
Yeah.
Which I really like, because big lads wrestling is awesome.
And they're both big lads who have grown to be really good at wrestling as well, who have started off as kind of just the big lads with limited moves and have become really good in ring. So,
And I like that. I know this is something that we bang on about all the time, about people booing Roman Reigns, because I don't... If you don't like someone, fine, but... The level of vitriol he gets on the internet when he's dead good at his job, looks the part, is good at his job, puts his body on the line all the time, and seems a decent human being.
But it's great, though, isn't it? I don't think WWE mind at all. Like, it's way past baby faces and heels now. It's way more characters, and it's like they have some kind of issue that Cena gets a. It's like a dueling reaction. No, they don't. They love that Cena gets
really
a dueling reaction.
Yeah.
In fact, nowadays, lots of people are desperate to get Cena-esque reactions.
Yeah.
You're actively seeking that dueling reaction that Cena gets every time he's out there.
Yeah.
Like, same thing for Roman now. Roman can be this, like, cool person that just gets, like, viscerally booed on all the big shows. And, like, it was cool back in the late 90s when Hitman did the Canadian thing and he was booed by everyone, and then when he showed up in Britain or Canada he got these massive baby face reactions.
Yeah.
It's cool when people aren't just like cookie cutter good guy or bad guy.
The thing that excited me the most about the Shield a reunion though was there was that period where it did feel that if they turned Roman it'd be perfect. Everyone who hated him would be kind of happy with it, because he was having good matches, but they felt it was wrong. And then it got past that. It's like, if they turn him now, they're going to hate it anyway, because they're going to feel they've turned him too late and they're just not going to be happy. Roman breaking up the Shield would be a hell of a way to turn him heel and get it properly and get it done. So that kind of excitement of like him being the one to turn on the guys and all that, at some point. Yeah. I thought would be wonderful down the line to have that, to make him properly booed for good reason and all that, or taking control of the boos, I guess.
Mm. I love that mentality of his. Like, he's had a few lines that have just been, I'm not a bad guy, I'm not a good guy, I'm the guy.
Yeah.
And that thing where, like, he just got booed for 15 minutes.
Well, as you said, that bit on Raw, that's still one of my highlights. Yeah.
So we were there, and I was nudging John going, this is the best thing I have ever seen. 10 minutes of him standing.
Absolutely fantastic. And he nailed it as well. He nailed it with just the going to and all the pausing and then just saying, my yard now, and dropping the mic and walking off was like,
that's like a wondrous thing about pro wrestling as well. You ever think about like pro wrestling when like someone who has never watched it before watches it? There's so many things which crowds go absolutely mental for, where if you've never seen it before, you'd just be so confused. You're like, what is going on? Why is everyone, he's just standing there. Why is everyone losing their minds?
Again, it's really, in this last year again, he's removed any reason for people to criticise him. As we've said for a long time, he's had really good matches. Yeah. So people have then started to go, yeah, but his mic works, or his promo's not good. That was one of the best promos of the year. Another one was him and Cena in one of the best promos of the year. So it's like, he's not always on point with it, and it still takes some work. But you can't say anymore, oh, he's rubbish on the mic, or this or that. It's like, he's got all of it now.
Was the crowd invested in this six-man? So, like I said earlier, this is the one which I had to watch on mute, because we were in the we were in a hospital waiting emergency waiting area, and as a result, there were a few spots which didn't quite come off, and because I was watching it on mute, I couldn't tell if that had really affected the match. And the crowd was
I thought
afterwards.
The match was great because the crowd was super up for it.
Yeah,
The crowd was super up for it was I expected the Shield to dominate it. They made it much more 50-50. And there was times when you genuinely thought the New Day were going to win.
Yeah.
Like the double midnight hour that they did.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
See, all I could see on that was him trying to pick Ambrose up on the right side and then readjusting and picking him up on the left side to get rates, because he had to get two guys up, right? But that was because it was on mute.
Yeah.
And I kind of, as I was watching, I was like, I bet you this match is great.
Yeah.
On volume,
I
bet you with an audience engaged in this.
But that,
this
that bit
match
that you're talking about, that little sequence there, it looks to me like something had gone wrong. Like someone had forgotten where they were meant to be, or
no, it's just picking someone up the wrong way because you're used to doing it.
Yeah, someone was just standing there doing nothing for a minute. And
waiting.
It didn't hurt it massively. When the sound on it didn't hurt it really. And I like the fact they had to kill Kofi Kingston to win the match.
Yeah.
They had to legit murder him.
Yeah,
in order to win, because if they're kicking out of a double version of their finisher, then they need to do a super duper version of their
finisher. I enjoyed that moment and that element, which I've not really seen, where Seth was saying, finish this, and they did kind of in a panic run round and just take them out in as brutal a way as possible to do that kind of, well, we need to stop them being able to come and stop
to break
which again, you don't see too much. It always seems like they've just happened to bump into people or whatever, but that running around the outside to hunt them down, to take them out as far away from where the pin is going to take place as possible, I really enjoyed that. I was like, oh, this is,
they both put a lot of, both tactics. Teams put a lot of effort into when they're doing triple team moves to do those cool triple tags. I'll tag in. Now we got 5 seconds with all three of us, right?
Brilliant.
Those are the rules.
I noticed that.
Yeah,
so like, that's a really cool thing to do, right?
Yeah, I didn't
just,
notice
oh,
that.
We'll just
that
do one tag.
It's something I'd never noticed before as well until that match, and I was like, oh, that's really smart.
Yeah.
Really smart. Next up, we had the women's roster Raw versus SmackDown 5-on-5 Survivor Series match. Now, I feel so. When they do the entrances for these things, I'm always like, who gets the biggest entrance?
Yeah,
that's probably going to... And Asuka got the biggest entrance.
Yeah,
Asuka was the star of the match.
Yeah.
I'd written a couple of things. I'd written Asuka got the big entrance, Alicia Fox's hat and general insanity I'd written. And then I'd written this sentence. So we're about a minute and a half, 2 minutes into the match. I'd written, huh, if during the Divas era, this would just be a load of roll-ups in 3 minutes... A 3 minute long match, and I wrote that just as Becky Lynch was rolled up and pinned. However, I do think having the shock of that did make, because the match still went a fair amount of time, but it kind of made you go, oh, the captain of one side has been eliminated by a roll up, and a good roll up. It wasn't a lazy roll up, it was a good lot of leverage roll up. then everyone just looked really, really good in it again. There's no one who felt out of place in it. Everyone was
fantastic. And in the lead up to this, I think Alicia Fox has just been the MVP of the women. After feeling like she's just floating for so long, I think she's just been absolutely fantastic
in
her.
Character's nuts. Like, it's
brilliant.
Good.
It's really she played. But that was the thing. For ages, they kind of had her as a bit nuts, but didn't really have her wrestling that much. And then when they put her in the ring, you remember she's probably the longest on the roster. Other than Natty, right?
Yeah, I would imagine Natty's probably the longest.
So she's been doing this a long time. So suddenly she's been doing the character for ages as someone's crazy girlfriend or whatever else, but not really having much ring time. And now it's like, all right, she can go as well and add that to the crazy character in the ring, which is unique because no one else is doing that. And that's what's always exciting. And I think it's where the women's division sometimes feels a little bit like it's not got quite as much focus on it from that planning point of view, is there's not as much variation in character as there is in the men's. I know there's a lot more.
Well, my main problem with women's wrestling in as a whole, both in the Divas era and now we've got fantastic women's wrestlers, is the amount of Mean Girls characters there are.
Yeah.
That seems to be a default heel character is to be Mean Girls.
Yeah.
And
it's Mean Girls and just that, aren't they a good athlete?
Yeah.
Aren't they a good, legitimate athlete? It's like, that's great, but they can be a good, legitimate athlete and a character as well. It can be...
That's
you can
why
have
I
more
like Bailey's
it.
Character.
Yeah.
Because there's more to her. And it's difficult to pin down what the more to her is, but she just feels a sidestep.
At least there's something else there,
With Alicia Fox, I remember, I think you were with me, we went to a SmackDown or a Raw years ago at the O2. And she was doing the whole thing where she's coming out drinking people's drinks, walking around, like climbing on the wall.
She had 3 weeks when she was batshit.
Yeah. And it was so over. Yeah. So people were like, yes, her. Because she's, if you're going to have a gimmick, throw yourself into it. You know what I mean?
And then for some reason it just kind of went away.
Yeah.
It's a good example of a match, isn't it? Just because, like, clearly the the booking note, I guess, is get Asuka over.
Yeah.
Like, portray Asuka as that, which 100% did. Like, everyone just wanted to see
and
Asuka.
Was a relief as well, because there's been a lot of NXT call-ups where they've been so hot on NXT and then they kind of
get a slow push
and a bit of a build. So it was so great. Portray. It was like,
imagine if they're going to?
And then they did, and it was like, yes.
Imagine if she'd been pinned in this.
Yeah.
That'd be a weird way to get rid of it.
But they managed to, what was good is they managed to get her up as the big star without really hurting anyone. Nobody really.
No one got
I enjoyed the Nia Jax count out. Everyone piling in on her repeatedly and then her not having to look weak anywhere.
So
she was kept away.
The Undertaker debuted at Survivor Series, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he got eliminated by count out.
Right.
Because it would be absolutely unbelievable. And he got eliminated by count out by being distracted and beating someone up for so long.
Yeah.
I think it was Dusty Rhodes that he got counted out. And that was the only realistic way to have him be eliminated.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he had to beat everybody because he was a huge undead monster. Mm. And
it would have been the way they eliminated Strowman if Strowman hadn't been
over. Yeah,
that was exactly. With Strowman in that match, the more anyone else was being eliminated, I just couldn't think, well, Raw have to win then because he's still there. And if you've not got 4 or 5 on the other team, you can't eliminate him.
Yeah.
And particularly when it was down to the older guys in the. It was like, well, no, you can't.
I also like.
You can't eliminate him.
I like that the fans were so excited about seeing Tamina and Nia Jax in a ring together.
Yeah.
Like every time they got in the ring, people were like, yes!
You know, Tamina looked pretty small compared to Nia Jax, though, right?
Yeah.
Like Tamina comes across like a big lady in a lot of her segments on TV and stuff, but compared to Nia, she's small.
Yeah.
Like, Nia's big.
But they
big
need
girl,
to be on different girl. Shows, which they are, for her character to work, I think. And it does feel unfortunate that Tamina was doing pretty cool in that character, and then they brought Nia in, who's a bigger version of a similar character, brooding, I'm the muscle of the team kind of thing.
I think we have to give a shout out to Carmella's soul, which was kicked out of her by Asuka at one point during this match.
Yeah.
That was one of the best kicks I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Just the one that she pinned her with just kicked her head off.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So good.
S O U L L A S S.
Thanks.
Soulless.
Thanks,
beautiful.
Mate. You had that song stuck in your head for quite some time.
For the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, last 3 weeks. Next up, Intercontinental Champion versus US Champion, The Miz versus Barry Corbin.
Another one I watched on mute. How did the crowd take to this? Because it's heel, right? or did Miz just de facto be a babyface?
It's weird. It was heel. The Miz. So
they did a bit of build with Corbin riling Miz, sort of via Maurice.
Yeah. So at one point, Maurice in the crowd, so he blows a kiss to her at one point, and it, the Miz has been acting like a babyface, kind of leading up to it by with the whole "you stay away from my wife."
Yeah.
Because that is a very babyface thing to do. However, at the same time, he's got outside interference.
Yeah.
So it's weird in that they were both a little bit heel, a little bit face. The crowd were into it. The crowd, there was pretty much 50-50 dueling chance for both the Miz and Corbin. And Corbin wins. And at the end, when he does his little promo, he basically just cunts off everybody and he just leaves. And you're like, oh, good work. Just in case anyone was thinking about cheering him, because I brought this up with you. You love his music.
I love his
music. You love Barry's theme music at the minute.
Yep.
And I think it's really babyface theme music.
Yeah, it is.
It's babyface music.
Right.
It's not shouty and loud enough to be a heel music.
Yeah. It's melodic.
It's too melodic, and it sounds a bit like Christian rock.
I really enjoyed how,
like Evanescence.
What's it called? End of Days.
Maurice kind of was there, but not as Maurice. She was there as the Miz's pregnant wife. She wasn't being Maurice and being out. She was in the crowd being very crowd, right? quiet and wasn't as made up and as dressed up and all that kind of thing. It's like that was clearly a thing of, because if she's Maurice, she's been built so much as a heel, no one's going to care if he's shouting at her. That's what you do to Maurice. That's the role. The baby faces argue with Maurice. So I thought that was quite a nice little interesting touch of just going, well, kind of forget. It's the wrestler's wife. Kind of is a bit of a suspension of disbelief.
I like that, because that's a follow a match with a lot of eliminations, a lot of people hitting their finishes.
Yep.
I like that they went to some good old-fashioned psychology with this and Baron Corbin's a big lad, so what do? You target his leg, and going after his leg all the time was really cool. And Corbin's selling of the leg, even walking back up the ramp, which is something that some people forget to do. Like, what have you been targeted the entire match? You're not instantly healed when the bell rings, and the amount of people who forget that. And his selling of it was really, really good. I also love my favourite thing with... I used to love the Big Boss Man.
The slide in and slide out
thing that he does. If you've never seen videos of Big Boss Man when he had a brief run in All Japan in the early 90s, some of the stuff he was doing there was nuts. The slide, because he was so athletic for a big dude, and it's
Boss
the same.
Man slide in, slide out, so cool.
Yeah.
Corbin does it really good, and they did it a couple of times, right? Because he did it, and then he bipped the guy on the floor instead of sliding right back in and bipping Miz.
Well, we watched a couple of WWE house shows where he was wrestling Kalisto.
Sin Cara, sorry.
And he was doing like three or four of them a match, and because Sin Cara is really athletic as well, the whole dynamic of it was really, really smart. And you look at it and go, oh, he's athletic for a big bloke, and then you remember, he used to play in the NFL.
Yeah.
And he was a lot heavier. He was 100 pounds heavier when he was in the NFL.
Mm.
So he was massive. He was a big dude.
Miz was great too, right?
Yeah.
Miz just is great.
Did that really good counter of End of Days where he backflipped out of it.
Yeah, I thought that was lovely.
It's tricky,
that was
man.
Really good.
Miz is quality. Miz is just he's really, I mean, we bang on about it a lot on this podcast about how good he is at his job. I'd like to see Miz do the Intercontinental title for a bit. I'd genuinely like to see Miz in the world title picture again, because I think he's over enough to be in that picture as a proper dickhead heel.
He could well find himself there, right? He's a total, if anything, he's a little bit like one of those guys who he's such a utility man.
Yeah.
He might not ever be like the big star for a number of years, just because you can put him anywhere.
Yeah,
he'll make it work.
And having had those match of the year performances with Ziggler in recent history, kind of, you know, you're going to be able to trust him in the big matches as well. Not just his promo, not just his build. He can go in and have a hell of a match as well.
For me, this was the first point in this show where the brand versus brand thing slightly took me out of it, because it's ostensibly heel versus heel, which means that someone in this case, both of them, slightly change up their character. Which doesn't do either of them a huge amount of favours.
I agree.
And then it happened again in the tag match where the Usos came out nominally as babyfaces, with a bit of a promo. But
I always like the one thing I do like about it is like ECW used to do this a lot, where they'd have a pay per view where their story is going into the pay per view, but there is a story arc from start to end of the pay per view. And like Deadly Games, the Survivor Series is a really good example. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a story, there's a definite story from the beginning of the pay per view to the end of the
pay-per-view. That's the 1998 one, isn't
yeah,
it? Which, is wrestling wise not great, storyline wise absolutely unbelievable.
That's exceptional, yeah. And when they, at least this year's with the, I know what you're saying about the Raw and SmackDown thing, but at least with this year's, they made a big deal of like the scoreline and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It was constantly about everything was about Raw versus SmackDown. There was no non-Raw versus SmackDown matches on the pay-per-view itself. So everything was about this, which is the superior brand.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can suspend your disbelief of like the okay, we all know that they're it's the same company. We all know it's getting a 3-0. Oh, okay. And you know what I mean? Then it's still quite a cool dynamic of like one company against another sort of thing.
Yeah. John just mentioned the tag match, which was the Bar versus the Usos. Both of them ostensibly heels. Again, going from our experience of watching house shows a couple of weeks ago, the Usos act like heels, but are absolutely super cheered everywhere because they're properly cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking about when we first started Tuesday Night Joy, we were like, let's just make them badasses. And then they did. And we were like, And it's been awesome ever since.
And we said, make Jinder champ. And we said, make Naomi champ. It's just that they listen
they
to them.
Listen
they listen
to us.
it's been really demanding this for a while.
Sign Eddie Dennis.
Yeah. Where's the Welsh match?
How are we doing?
So,
hit me up.
Again, the face heel dynamic wasn't really there, but the Usos just did their same gimmick as normal, and they're going to get cheered because they're the Usos.
Yeah.
And the same way that I was thinking about this. Remember when they first put Sheamus and Cesaro together, and Cesaro would play up and get cheered, and Sheamus would play up and get booed.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I think Sheamus has got exactly the same amount of respect, maybe slightly less than Cesaro, but the crowd are like, "No, he's dead good as well."
Yeah. Oh, they love it. Yeah.
And they're two tag teams I really, really like watching. Yeah. If you think about how many good matches both teams have had this year, they've really been nailing it. Like, really, really nailing it. And I think the changed up version of the Usos is so much more interesting than the 100%. You know, the face painted ones who just shouted into the audience quite a lot. And they were clearly good at what they did, but this 100%, surly dickhead version of the Usos is so cool.
It's wonderful. The back end of this is exquisite, isn't it? Like the last, like the super kick party, and then that dive tag.
Yeah,
that dive tag was wonderful. That is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, nail the guy, dive tag, so he's on the apron, so he can climb straight up to do his big splash.
Yeah,
just
that was a wonderful, wonderful spot, wasn't it? Yeah, that was great.
And it's nice because I think both shows have decent tag team divisions, so there's nothing. But it's nice to have that. Oh, we're not going to get to see these guys wrestle each other for the next year potentially. So let's at least make the most out of it now. But I did think the ending sequence was. I think that this suffered a little bit in the first couple of minutes of people like, well, we know both these teams can have really good tag matches, so this needs to be nuts. In the same thing that we have at main events at Progress. The first 5 minutes of nearly every main event we've had in Progress in the last 2 years, the fans have been nowhere near as loud as they are for the rest of the show because they're like, well, it's the main event. It's nearly always fantastic. A title match. It's probably going to be dead good. Nut stuff's going to happen, but we'll probably save ourselves. And it's weird that people do react like that. Whereas mid-card matches have a much easier time of being able to establish themselves. But with this, I think the fans expected it to be nuts. And it delivered on it being nuts towards the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Sheamus and Cesaro are great, absolutely great.
I'd like them to sort their entrance out. I don't mean the excellent blinding white light with the camera walking around them. I mean when they put their thumbs out. Like, do you guys know what I mean?
Yeah, when they do that.
When they do,
the pose that's on the front of their T-shirt.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's never quite in sync.
Do you like Cesaro is always lower than Sheamus?
I'd like them to sort that.
You'd
out.
Like them to come out with a spirit level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good.
A bar.
Nice work. Nice work. Title versus title again next. Alexa Bliss versus the, as of this week, new women's SmackDown champion, Charlotte Flair. I think it gave the match a bigger feel having Charlotte in it instead of Natalya. I like Natalya and think she's great, but I think this just gave it a bigger feel. It felt like the two biggest stars on each division were in the
match. I agree. It was a great change.
I'm very excited for the future to see Alexa Bliss versus Asuka, because I think that'd be great.
Did Alexa work with Charlotte while she was on SmackDown? Because she switched, right? She was in the brand.
I think Charlotte was on Raw.
They switched at the same time. And also, the story here is they're the only two women to have held both Raw and SmackDown titles as well. So there's that extra narrative to it.
And they were kind of Charlotte's thing on the pre-show when they had a kind of interview with Alexa at the desk, and Charlotte on a screen was saying that you've been running away from me, essentially, that the only reason you've been dominant is because you've always gone where I'm not.
That's pretty cool.
That was good.
I think they're both so over, so ridiculously over. Alexa's unbelievably popular. If you think, I know women's wrestling is so much better than it has been over the last couple of decades, right? But if you then, it's one thing to have women's wrestling that is technically as good as men's wrestling.
Yeah.
It's another thing to have women's stars in women's wrestling that are as over as the men.
Yeah.
And that's completely the point we're at now. Because I think Alexa Bliss, if you go to a WWE show, there's a lot of people wearing her merch.
Yeah.
And that's one of the chief indicators of if you're over or not.
Yeah.
Is, are people wearing your merch? And a lot of people wear hers.
Yeah.
I think she's really over. I think Charlotte's really over, partly because of her association with her dad, but also because she's really good.
She's really good.
And I think
Asuka's really over, Bayley's really over, Sasha's really over.
Yeah.
Lots of girls, really, isn't there?
Absolutely. And then you look at you look at NXT, Ember's really over.
Kairi will be really over.
The women's division is in NXT is one of the most exciting things because of all the talent they've teased and brought over with
some woman called Ronda Rousey there apparently.
I mean, just speaking of the strength of both a women's division, with the addition of the people they've exposed in the Mae Young Classic and NXT, they talked last year, and I was glad it didn't go ahead, but they talked last year of a women's Royal Rumble. This year, that feels like a viable thing, even if it's a pre-show thing, with the amount of Mae Young Classic. Again, it could be a 20, but it feels like they've suddenly got, in NXT alone, they've got such a wealth of female talent that is really good and really over.
Yeah,
it feels like that they could have a X amount, or five from NXT, five from SmackDown, five from Raw, and five who were in the Mae Young Classic who haven't.
Independence.
I think that'd be amazing.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
And I know they tune in, so I look forward to seeing that in January.
If that happens, copyright Mr. S. Pitt.
I think here we go. I know when they were talking of it last year, I was like, no, it's not time for it. You would literally be using all the women, and that
doesn't isn't help right.
That doesn't work. It's everyone in one go. Whereas now, they can have others who aren't being used. And
I mean, if they make the Royal Rumble a 4-hour pay-per-view, or a 5-hour pay-per-view,
sort of six.
Or six, like yesterday was, with pre-show, no reason you can't do it.
Be fantastic.
Give half an hour of the pre-show to a 20-person Rumble, 20-woman Rumble.
But if it's a Raw Rumble,
that's the problem.
30-man Raw Rumbles, and the shortest one's probably an hour and 15.
Yeah, well, that's.
But so you've got a really short one in '95, where they only did 90-second entrances. Shawn Michaels goes over in it, but he did.
There's stuff you can play with there. You can do 90-second. You can do 20, as said. And well,
you've got a 2-hour kickoff.
It's the fact that it's the 2-hour kickoff, give an hour over. Yeah. Everyone will be tuning into that last hour of the kickoff if the last hour is the first ever Women's Royal Rumble.
Book it.
That'd be nuts.
Charlotte won by submission. I don't think anyone came out of it looking badly. Everyone came out of it looking good, both brands. And they needed Charlotte to win, so SmackDown would go 3-2 up.
Yes.
In order to set up the rest of the show.
Yeah.
It should then have been probably no surprise in Brock Lesnar versus AJ Styles who won that match. Let's be honest, you probably all predicted Brock Lesnar was going to win anyway.
Oh, my God, it was good.
Good falses, though.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
It was
fantastic.
And it was great. And it felt different to the rest of the show in that it felt like a proper scrap. Everything else felt like professional wrestling. This felt like a hybrid somewhere between professional wrestling and
fight.
Violence.
which is the biggest attribute to Brock Lesnar as a performer.
His legitimacy.
Every single one of his matches feels completely different to everything else. Not just on the product, but in worldwide wrestling in general, there's an air of legitimacy, there's an air of fear, unpredictability. He's such a loose cannon.
Yep.
You're like, what is he going to do when he shoots behind on someone and gives, like, it's not as if people have much choice if he decides to German suplex you, do you know what I mean? You go in. like, all right, if AJ is doing it, then he's going to make it look like $1 million, but like, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. He's going regardless.
Yeah.
It was terrific. It was the best match on the show, I think.
Yes, I agree.
My appreciation for AJ Styles, I think I've said this on the podcast a few times, when he was in TNA, I knew he was good, but he wasn't my favourite wrestler in the world. When he was in New Japan, I knew he was good, but there was people in New Japan I preferred. In his time in WWE, I've learned to appreciate him a lot better, and now appreciate his past before WWE even more.
Yeah.
Because you just watch him and go, oh, he's he's an absolute machine in terms of being the ideal professional wrestler in so many levels.
What a mesmerizing performer, and you consider that he's never really had a long hiatus with injury and the style that he wrestles. Like, think about that for a second. Think about how long ago the X Division stuff started in TNA, how long he's wrestled consistently without a significant break, and the style that he wrestles.
And, and how late he came to the WWE and how quickly he's gone to... So again, just that, just as that was starting, I was like, imagine 2 years ago, AJ wouldn't have thought that he's going to be fighting Brock Lesnar
at Survivor Series
as a champion versus champ. That's mind-blowing. Mm. And it was... It delivered.
Yeah, I still like the fact that they're... Even though it's a big match with a big match feel, you're not kicking out the F5.
Yeah.
So it's keeping the F5 special for eventually, presumably, at WrestleMania when someone dethrones him and kicks out of it.
Yeah.
I want Lesnar to never lose.
Yeah.
I love watching him as a wrestling fan.
I think he's great.
I've got a question that the answer... I need to stress as well to anyone listening... The answer isn't actually important. It doesn't devalue anything. But
very much like my English degree.
Yeah, exactly.
the answers mattered in my maths degree. I was gonna... They were right or they were wrong.
Yeah.
Like a real question.
Yeah, my degree, no wrong answers. Brilliant.
I would agree that this was the match of the night.
Yeah.
Was it better than Brock's match last year, which was Goldberg?
Ooh.
In the squash?
Ooh. That's a good question.
And my feeling, I think me and John might agree, because I remember on one of the roundtables, I wasn't on you having that as one. I thought that was one of my favourite matches in recent years, because again, I didn't expect it, and it was that was a truly. I know a lot of people were like, oh, that was a lot of people were grumpy about it, but it got so much discussion. In fact, it got more discussion than AJ and Brock is going to get, despite that being the best match.
Well, it reset of the wrestling, night.
Yeah,
it, because it made everyone go, oh shit, you can lose really quickly.
And they shocked everyone by doing what Goldberg did in 90% of his career. It's like, that's all he's ever done. And everyone was like, oh my God, why did this, like, 90, that's amazing to trick people with something that's been there the whole time. Yeah,
I think given the context, the Goldberg match is probably better.
I feel that. I said, partly, even though I love this, I thought that after, that was the thing that came to mind. I was like, wow, actually, last year was...
Partly because the score thing, like it was... Obviously, it was going to 3-3 because it's wrestling. Yeah. It would be amazing if started one and they just sacked off the Survivor Series match.
Yeah, we don't need it now, lads.
What's the point? It's 4-2.
Like a World Series.
Yeah, it's first to four. Yeah. It's not just the title score at the end. Oh, okay.
Snooker.
Yeah.
so, yeah, for, you know, I think in... my voice has come back.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Hello. That was good. There it is. Good work. Right, we'll start the podcast again, guys. Go on.
So, yeah, in context, I think the Goldberg match was, in the context of the show the landscape, it was probably more important and a better match. But
I would argue that the word "better" doesn't work for art in general, because in the moment, Goldberg Brock is better. However, AJ Brock has far more replay value.
Yeah,
so I will go back and watch AJ Brock a number of times.
I understand that makes sense.
I love that you just brought art into it. And, and it, for
that's
a brief
how deep
minute,
this question has got.
For a brief minute, it genuinely felt like this podcast had become a Radio 4 program.
You've got an eyebrow there,
didn't really
it?
Excited.
I can ask a question, but I need to stress. I need to stress the answer isn't important.
I mean, let's be honest.
In the context of art, it's
we're four intelligent men discussing an art form, so you know it works.
Next one's hosted by Melvin Bragg, right? That's how that works.
Yes, it always sounds like he's got a cold.
I know
he'll be perfect.
Now on to five men in blue t-shirts against five men in red t-shirts.
So let me give
four men in blue t-shirts.
Oh, true. Yeah. Yeah,
let me give you a rundown.
Cena is apparently a free agent. Whatever the fuck that means.
But Triple H also just he wore his own red t-shirt.
Yes.
Yeah, rather than wearing a Raw red t-shirt.
Let me give you a quick. That's like really subtle school uniform violations,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it? Yeah. It says I got to wear.
The most rebellious thing you could do at school is wear your tie too short, right?
Yeah, that's essentially what Triple H did.
So this is how the 5-on-5 match went. So spoilers, if you've got to this point and you haven't noticed there's any, grow up.
I can't help thinking this should have happened 2 hours ago.
Nakamura eliminated by Braun Strowman via running power slam. Bobby Roode eliminated by Braun Strowman by a running power slam. Samoa Joe eliminated by John Cena via attitude adjustments. Finn Balor eliminated by Randy Orton via RKO. Randy Orton eliminated by Braun Strowman via power slam. Shane McMahon eliminated. So I'll get this right. Kurt Angle eliminated by Shane McMahon, technically by a pedigree from Triple H. Shane McMahon eliminated by Triple H via pedigree. Braun Strowman and Triple H survive. Raw win Survivor Series. At the end of the match.
That's what the shipping forecast.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? Dogger.
Well, not now.
At the end of the match, Braun Strowman goes over to Triple H, tells him to not dick around on his watch again. Triple H goes to pedigree Braun Strowman. Strowman powers out of it, gives him two running power slams. Star of the show is Braun Strowman. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens were also involved during the match,
interfering against their own brand,
against their own brand, like the scabs that they are.
Poke the picket line.
Crossing a picket line. I think it made sense that my favourite bit of the match is Triple H pedigreeing Kurt Angle because it's his brother-in-law.
Mm. Yeah,
that's my favourite bit of storytelling in the match is, oh, so I get that you want one brand to win over the other, but that's family and that's more important.
You're about to break my brother-in-law's ankle.
Yeah, and I did like that. I like the fact as well. The match went half an hour. There was no eliminations until about 12 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
And you being eliminated by Strowman does not affect your career in any way because Strowman is an absolute monster.
Completely.
The closest thing they've managed to organically make since The Undertaker, I think.
Yeah.
Because
Kane was real monster in 96.
I think you're right there. So, but he's that level of.
Yeah, so
you look at him and monster, go, well, no one's beaten him.
Mm-hmm.
He has lost. He's lost several times.
Has he fought Lesnar?
Yeah, he lost to Lesnar.
Right. Yeah. But you look at it and go, but he's getting more and more powerful. So whether they build to another him and Lesnar match.
Yeah.
Sorry, like a sort of end of level boss.
Yeah, he is an end of level boss.
He's borrowed knee pads off Lars.
Callback
to the very start of the podcast.
He's exactly an end of level boss. If you ever played the video game Final Fight, just one of those big lads who just pile drives you.
Literally comes in and goes, roar at the start, and then you fight him, and then when he wins, he goes, roar, 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 roar. He's an end of level boss.
I like the
great analogy.
Yeah. He's turned babyface as well. What's he done to turn babyface? He's climbed out of a bin van.
Yep.
And gone rah a lot. But for someone who's relatively new, he's good as well. Good. Like I know he's a big lad, and a lot of it is based on the fact that he's huge. But he doesn't ever look out of place. No. He seems to have got it very quickly.
the look on his face when he was trying to compute what Triple H had done.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Just a look of total confusion.
100%.
Like, he's still best. I don't know why, but he still seems to be best placed when there's lots of people involved in the match.
Mm, yeah.
So the four-way at SummerSlam was exceptional.
It was great.
Where he was just wild and throwing like those wheelie chairs around the place.
It's like, there's an element of like Bruiser Brody or someone.
Yeah. And then like this, he was excellent last night. And then maybe in the singles with Brock, it wasn't as good when there was less people involved.
It's because, again, it's similar as we were saying to the benefit of Lars Sullivan taking a bit of a beating and then doing his big moves. If there's a multi-man, you can legitimately have a load of people pile on him to give him a beating and then him come back and be this this dominant beast, rather than just he's either got to be this dominant beast or you've got to reveal he is actually beatable.
Yeah, that's what they did,
because one
that,
man
right?
has beaten him. Yeah,
because they got the five of them to suplex him to the table and did a cool thing of doing that after Rude and Nakamura had been eliminated, 100%. So they cheated.
Yeah,
because two guys who shouldn't have been involved in it came out. So not only did it take five of them, it also took them cheating to take him out, because they had to bring back two guys who'd already been eliminated.
I wish I'd come up with a different trio now for my War Games question earlier on. A trio of Braun Strowman, Lars Sullivan and Volta.
Big lads.
Terrifying big lads incorporated.
You mean the winning team?
Or if it's a Survivor Series team, add Brock Lesnar to it.
Yeah, Brock, yeah.
And Coco Beware.
Couple of favourite moments from this match for me. Both the tangible, obvious visual excitement. Hang on, that sounded wrong.
Right.
The obvious excitement of both Nakamura and Rude to be getting into a Survivor Series elimination match.
Yeah.
In the WWE. With Triple H on the other side of the ring.
That was the thing.
So
and when I heard that Triple H had been added to it, I was like, all right, cool. That had some star power. I wasn't overly excited. Literally just him stepping in against Nakamura, I was so excited. And then exactly the same with Rude. And then putting over the reason Nakamura's here is Triple H brought him here. And again, you'd never thought of that match ever happening and them just being in there. And Nakamura in this, I thought, was fantastic. He's one that I felt since his move up, it feels like he's lost a lot of heat. There's not been, his matches have been cool, but he's not had those, wow, this is stealing the show. And in this, everything, he really benefited from the just coming in and doing your big moments and looking great.
But also as well with Nakamura was so hot in NXT, because most people who watch NXT know what New Japan is. Not everybody who watches Raw or SmackDown knows anything about New Japan, he's had to start again.
It's just tough, because when he came over they went that nuts for his music. Do you know what I mean? It felt like he got the introduction he needed, and then it's been a little bit
their business model pretty much now is right, you bring a hot talent from the independents or Japan or something like that, and you put them in front of a small audience of people who all know who they are. So present them as a megastar. And the millions of people who have your network then accept them as a megastar, even though they've never actually seen the historical back catalogue, which means they are a megastar. So when they show up on your main product, you're like, okay, cool, that guy's a megastar. Because the 1,000 people or however many people it is in Full Sail all portray him as a megastar.
400.
Oh, there you go. They all portray him as a megastar. So he must be a megastar, because it's not 400 people obviously in Full Sail, it's the millions of people that watch it on the network.
It's interesting that the next the first set of NXT TV tapings in the new year are not being filmed at Full Sail. They're being filmed at Center Stage, which is where they used to film WCW Saturday Night in Atlanta.
Oh, really?
So I think that's interesting.
Is that where they do Ring of Honor as well, in Atlanta?
No.
Ring
of Honor's northeast base.
Is that a bigger hall?
But when the Ring of Honor do Atlanta, they do tapings in Atlanta.
I couldn't tell you, mate. It's slightly bigger, but it's still a TV studio.
Oh.
So it's not massive, but I don't know whether that's a conscious decision because it's the same crowd watching it all the time at the TV tapings at Full Sail, and whether it's to try and see if they can generate a different atmosphere or whatever, or maybe it's the model to start taking the TV tapings on the road.
Maybe.
So who knows?
If it is that same room that Ring of Honor use, and I'm in no way saying that it is, but if it is, it's a theatre setup,
right?
Like Britain Academy.
It's not that then.
Okay.
Because I remember watching WCW Saturday Night, so I don't think it's there.
Okay.
Someone will tell us. Anyway, because that's how it works. Right, let's wrap things up. Let's plug some things. Mr. Eddie Dennis, what would you like to plug?
God, blimey.
As a now full-time professional wrestler, what would you like to...
Let me get my book out. my Twitter, at EddieDennis1986. Please add me, because if I get loads of followers on Twitter, maybe WWE will want to sign me, because I'll have loads of followers. I think that's how it works.
Have you been signed by WWE yet?
Yep. No, I just ghostwrite.
Is that commission based? Because I would be interested in that job as well. My Big Cartel,
www.bigcartel.com/Eddie Dennis I think.
No,
I
may have got that wrong. EddieDennis.bigcartel.com.
There you go. Good job, John Riley's here. Yeah, so please go on there and buy my t-shirts because that pays my mortgage and my cat's food and my cat's insurance. Pets are expensive, so if you could buy some t-shirts, that'll be good.
Is your pet insurance more expensive because you work in entertainment, like my car insurance?
Only if he's riding his cat to work.
No.
So, yes.
They didn't actually, they didn't ask for my occupation with my pet insurance. No. Interestingly.
Probably irrelevant.
Surely if your occupation's your vet, your pet insurance goes down significantly.
Yeah. They did ask his cat's occupation.
Yeah.
Hobbies.
Cat said he was a writer.
I'm employed. Yeah. And defendindywrestling.com, which is a clothing brand which myself, Mark Andrews and Pete Dunn founded, and we still run as just a trio, so please pop on there and buy some wonderful garms, one of which I'm wearing at
it's an audio medium.
I know, but I'd like people to know that I'm ready to get clothes on.
Eddie Dennis wears a peach coloured Defend Indie Wrestling t-shirt which looks like it's printed on a soft feel t-shirt.
There you go. That's like the audio description that you get on SOC late at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's good plugs for me. Thank you.
Good. Brylo.
Hi.
Plug some stuff. Don't plug your own Twitter because I know that you rarely tweet. No, plug that. It's fine.
No, don't have me. Progress Wrestling. I'll do it instead of you this week.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It saves me a job.
Progress Wrestling. We are doing 3 days at Alexandra Palace. First bank holiday weekend of May next year.
Are we?
Yeah.
Shit. Probably.
Not mention it?
No, I should probably put that in my diary.
Tickets go on sale next Monday, 27th of November at 12 o'clock. We are doing the SSE Arena Wembley. Cheers, sponsors.
Wembley.
Next September, 30th of September next year, 2018. Tickets are on sale for that. You can only get regular priced seats now, and there's not that many of them left.
Stupid is this? It's brilliant.
This is me just genuinely asking as a fan. If they were to sell out, can they open up more seating for you of the regular? So the expensive ones, essentially, you can't add more because that's there. But they can potentially, if it sells out, add more.
If we sell to the capacity that we set up for the initial capacity.
Initial allocation.
Thank you.
There you go,
initial
mate.
Allocation. Then, yeah, we can open up block by block.
It's why I would urge people to buy it early because I just love the idea of opening more up and more selling just because of...
Because if you're waiting until next
September...
The thing
of progress is all the chants, all the singing, and... I know if you're sat in the rafters, it's not going to be as personal as the ballroom or whatever, but imagining the volume of some of the singing for particular wrestlers and things, or the reaction is just...
We went to Takeover there when they did the London Takeover, and the atmosphere was ridiculous.
I was there also.
And my role as chief cheerleader is to make the atmosphere even better at Wembley. There might not be as many people there, but... That's my goal.
And it's a great venue. Even if you've got a ticket for the seats that are up on the raised areas, they're not that far from the ring.
It's really good. Average was everywhere. I watched a lot of mixed martial arts there with the Bama stuff and the Bellator stuff they do.
You're normally at the front though, aren't you? Though for that, because you
famous
are
famous as fuck. Yeah. So I get there, but sometimes I'll have a stroll about and just.
Just let people see your face.
Get in touch with the normal people.
There it is, normal people again.
Yeah, but yeah, it is. It's a really good arena for that. It's why when that was announced at Ali Pali, I was like, oh, that's a great spot for it because it is one that it doesn't. There are some venues, particularly with mixed martial arts, more so in fact, that I'd rather watch at home.
Right.
Just because it's so particularly with the ground stuff. As soon as if you're not famous as fuck, then you can't really
know
see
anything
what's
about
going
that.
On, but yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. It's even if you've got if you've got tickets that are on the balcony, not balcony,
yeah,
the raised tiered bits, you're not that far from the ring. You're certainly no further from the ring than you would be for the fourth tier of seats at Ali Pali.
Yeah,
where do people get tickets from, John?
For Wembley, go to the show dates page on progresswrestling.com.
Good.
I haven't mentioned. Hold on.
So you've got a cough.
I have mentioned that, and frankly, if the listeners haven't worked that out by now, they're not listening hard enough.
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler. Should have mentioned this 2.5 hours ago. We go to New Orleans in April.
Yeah, we are.
And it's part of WrestleMania weekend, 6th and 7th, 12 noon each day.
Noon.
Tickets are on sale now. Our friends at WWN are hosting us again, and they tell us that tickets are shifting quick.
Yeah, I tried.
We are the hot ticket in that venue.
Yeah, we got told that, which is quite nice. It's nice to be a hot ticket.
Yeah.
Never been a hot ticket before.
You're a hot ticket.
I am.
You are such a hot ticket.
Hot tamale.
Your mum's a hot ticket.
Scroobius Pip.
Oh, you're a hot ticket. The Leicester Comedy Festival in the new year.
Sold it out.
Sold out before they officially went on sale, pretty much, right?
Yeah. Can I plug one more thing?
Go ahead.
Black Friday sale on progresswrestling.com all this weekend. Between 10 and 70% off everything.
Wow.
70%. That's a good... As a mathematician, I can confirm that's a good saving.
Yeah. I like the idea of someone sitting there going, 10 and 70, but what's good? Oh, a mathematician's top good. I'm on board.
Could you just tell everyone that the 10% is also a good saving?
Yeah, also, a reasonable saving, the kind of thing that you would expect in Debenhams. Yeah. So doing your Blue Cross sale. But,
so between 10 and 70% off every item of merch on the store, and we ship worldwide. You don't get money off the shipping. Terms and conditions apply. Your mortgage may be right.
I've never got to do that in all the voiceover I've done. I've never got to do the really talking fast at the end of an advert thing. Makes me sad. Pip, what do you want to plug?
I would like to plug only two things. One is, if anyone hasn't already checked it out, watch all of Eddie's recent promos, because I think all the YouTube stuff that you've been doing is fantastic. From when you did the big one that went crazy of you quitting your full-time job as a teacher, to everything since then, the Mark Andrews stuff is wonderful. The back and forth, I thought Mark's one was great.
Yep.
Was greatly understated in your the intensity and anger of yours and the kind of what's going on of his. So I recommend checking all of them out to show that you don't have to have a weekly or three weekly TV shows to tell stories. So that, and the other thing I'd like to promote, which I don't think I've announced properly yet, but in December, end of December, there's going to be on my podcast, the Distraction Pieces podcast, a network drunk cast featuring everyone on the network, including Jim Smallman. Now, you may be aware that Jim Smallman is straight edge.
We've got a better plan.
To drink on his behalf will be Jimmy Havoc.
As
Jim's stunt drinker on the drunk cast. So,
but are you allowed to talk? Or are you just going to whisper into his ear?
That'd be great. It's translator as well. But yes, so it's going to be Dr. Susie Gage, who's going to be hopefully bringing a breathalyzer and definitely doing some cognitive testing as the drinking goes on.
I felt sure you were about to say, definitely doing some shots.
No, and probably doing some shots as well. Jason Reed, who does the Stop and Search podcast, who he's also not going to be drinking, which means it's on all of us to drink more. But I think Jimmy, as a substitute drinker for two people, is wildly qualified.
Yes.
There will be Jimmy, and there will be a Chris and Stew from the original Drunkcasts and from Hardcore Listening and myself. So yeah, we don't know how many episodes it'll be, because it's always a case of we start it and see how drunk we get and how long it goes, but I'm reckoning at least three, and we'll see. So yeah, I'm hugely excited about it. Like we've got a little network group message, and when I came up with the idea of Jimmy being there to drink on behalf of Jim, I was just hugely excited.
And it's the fact that we were both hassling him yesterday for what date he could actually do it whilst he was trying to work out a very complicated match for ICW.
Yeah.
So,
And it's just going, of course, I didn't even think about the timing of that.
I messaged him and went, sorry if I've been bothering you. He went, I'm not bothered. It's well fun.
Yeah.
So
we've
stunt drinker Jimmy.
Finally nailed a date for it.
I think you should whisper into his ear and he has to relay what you're saying.
He has to translate.
Imagine that. There'll be a lot more swearing than normal.
It's going to be special, but that's how we're ending the year. I kind of always end the year with the drunk casts so that we can record a load and put them out so that I never miss a week, because it's weird that I've been going 3 years now and not missed a week. So that's our kind of get out clause, is we record 4 or 5 episodes of drunkness just so I can have Christmas off.
How long does it take you to recover from that?
I don't get hangovers, which everyone is furious about.
You don't drink loads either, do you?
I don't. I only drink on the drunk cast and at my club night. But last year we had the guests, well, Ramesh Ranganathan and Brett Goldstein.
Right.
And within the first 3.5 hours, I think it was, Ramesh finished a whole bottle of crack and rum. And at about 4 hours in, he joked, good luck whoever's
got to edit this, at which point I revealed to him that we don't edit them, they go out. And he had a breakdown on air, basically saying, what? You're going to ruin my career. He's like, so no one's... So everything I've said whilst hammered on rum is going out. I was like, yes, that's how this works. We don't edit them. It all goes out and it's filthy, horrific glory.
I'm not really straight edge. I've just been saying this for a long time in the bid that when this podcast started on the Distraction Fixers Network, I might be asked to do one of these. And therefore, if I said I was straight edge, I'd never be asked to get drunk and therefore libel myself.
Yeah, that's all the cover up. The last a drunk cast we did, Chris had just done a 10-day fast. So he hadn't eaten for 10 days and he'd come back into it and just started. But it meant, again, just go back and listen to that, because there's I managed to put together a hilarious a little video, because we normally do a Facebook Live just before and a Facebook Live after. And the Facebook Live just before, I said to Chris, is there anything for people to look forward to? And his last comment was, well, of course, I've just done a fast, so I've not drunk or eaten, so I don't know how this is going to go. And then I cut to the Facebook Live video after, where Chris was in my studio where we were recording it, in a Riot helmet I've got, dancing to music that I was playing on my decks. He then tried to do the worm, smashed over a bucket of ice and just poured water everywhere. And it was just the beautiful juxtaposition of, oh, actually, I've done a fast, so I don't know how this is going to go. And then he was just drunk in a Riot helmet, trashing my studio. So, yeah. Oh, fun will be had.
I'm very excited about this. my plugs, jimsmorman.com/TNJ is where you point people to recommend them to this podcast, tell them where to subscribe, all that sort of jazz, rate and review and all that normal stuff you do with podcasts in order to help this here podcast out. The last few weeks I've been plugging my Leicester Comedy Festival show, which is I'm Sorry I Love You, A History of Professional Wrestling. But I've sold it out. So... now, and again, read between the lines, you probably know why I'm doing this show, but I'm not allowed to say why.
Is it money?
It is mainly money, yeah. but they're looking more likely like I might be doing a tour later in 2018. So if you've missed out, if you're not one of the 100 people who've got a ticket for it in Leicester in February, then I'll probably be touring it around the UK in a limited way in 2018. So thank you if you have bought a ticket. Thank you if you've just retweeted it or helped me get support for it. So I appreciate that. There's still some T-shirts left. JimSwimmer.com/TNJ if you want to buy a T-shirt. I'm not having a Black Friday sale because I've not thought about it and I've not got that many left. So if you want one of them, get one of them.
But if you do want a Black Friday sale, come to ProgressWrestling.com.
I mean, yeah. I mean, technically, I suppose I'd... do eventually end up with the money.
No.
Just less of it. A lot less. So anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be back with more Tuesday Night Jaw next week. Thank you again to my guests and we'll see you soon. Cheers.
Bye.
Cheerio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.